If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
It is the 50th episode of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. Woo! For July 15th. That's a Wednesday. We record on a Wednesday, 2015, alongside Ian Ferguson. I'm Pat Contry.
Howdy.
What's going to be talked about on the show today? We'll be talking about gaming news and lots of Comic-Con movie stuff that came out the past week. I'll talk about the unfortunate passing of Nintendo CEO Iwata at age 55, the Nintendo PlayStation prototype found, PewDiePie, the king of YouTube, addresses his wealth in an online video. We'll also be discussing the lawsuit against a prototype that's being produced as a new Super Nintendo game.
Or was produced.
Marisa Tomei, cast as Aunt May. What happens when Nintendo collectibles get stolen and sold back to the person who was stolen from? We'll talk about that. The Batman versus Superman Comic-Con trailer. Affleck may star, direct in, and co-write a Batman standalone movie. The Suicide Squad trailer. The Ash versus Evil Dead trailer.
Yay.
The Comic-Con Star Wars behind the scenes reel.
Sure.
The CU Podcast 50th episode, Memories. Memories like the ones we used to know. And your Q&A, Ian. I feel like I asked you this before, but what's going on in Ferguson land?
You did ask me this before, so I'm going to truncate it. I'm drinking. My friend moved into town today that I've known since high school. I love him dearly. He moved in with his, girlfriend. So I'm very happy to have a super close friend, you know, but back in my life.
I'm a super close friend, almost.
And in addition to that, I'm just trying to read a lot of the comics and stuff that I got at Comic-Con. I'm trying to get back into a place where I can kind of relax after a lot of, like, convention stuff and long work hours. That's kind of where I sit.
Comic-Con was fun and exhausting. I was complaining to you on the drive over that 4 days is just insane for Comic-Con.
I love 4 days, but I'm always meeting people from out of town.
I got to see Pixel Dan for, like, literally 5 minutes before he had to leave. It was like, oh, hey, Pat. Hey, bye. Didn't get to see Andre. He had, like, four panels. Andre's blowing up Black Nerd Comedy. He did the Dino Charge Power Rangers, or Dino Thunder. Dino Thunder Power Rangers panel. He moderated that. He moderated a Ninja Turtles cartoon panel.
Neat.
Or toy one, I forget. And then he did a couple others he was a part of. So Andre's blowing shit up. Hung out with Franklin one day. Franklin did 1 day this year at Comic-Con, but then, of course, I end up buying stuff for him. And he's like, oh, yeah, I did need that Fantastic Four Marvel Masterworks. I got to go back and hunt it for a half hour. But then on Sunday, there was, like, this, as we call the sloppy stacks, where they just throw, you know, the 60s and 70s books, not the highest-end ones,
yeah,
but they're still cool. They had them for $1 each Sunday afternoon. I bought, like, 50 of them. I just went through them. Oh, you know, my friend didn't really like me looking at them for that long, but, you know, you got to wait. Sorry. And other than that, I actually hung out with Sean Baby a little bit on Thursday. Was spotted with his orange mohawk, and we talked for like a half hour. I met Sean Baby about a year and a half ago at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, so it was cool seeing him. And then I hung out with my pal James Rolfe, who came down with Kyle Justin, who does the theme song. And I just realized we're both
name dropper.
I just realized we're both wearing Wisdom Tree shirts, which I think is funny as hell.
Indeed, we are.
The good thing I didn't wear that one, and we had to fight each other like we're girls at a prom. So that was fun. And then I get back to work on my book. Hopefully a new Pat the Indian's Punk video. It'll be a shorter one, at least in execution, maybe not in length of time. And I'll do that. And I have Con Bravo I'm leaving for in a week. 4 days of fun in Canada. That'll be fun. And then, that's my life.
Mm. I told myself I wasn't going to buy anything at Comic-Con this year, and I ended up buying manga, and I ended up buying records, and I ended up buying a shitload of Donald Duck and Scrooge comics, and I bought Smut, and I bought a lot of fucking stuff, but it was fun. Comic-Con for me is a little bit easier, I think, because I spend so much of it outside of the convention hall sitting in restaurants with people that I know from out of town. So it is a little bit easier. I'm not walking constantly. I had lunch with my friend John. I hung out with my friends Nate and Jenny.
See any panels?
No. I don't do panels. The time that I would normally that a person would normally devote to panels is what I usually devote to going and getting a beer with someone and trying to see as many of my out-of-town friends as I can, and still see all of the convention floor. My favorite day is usually the one where Vonnie has off and we walk around and see everything, and it's cool because she's worked usually a day or two before she gets her day to go. You know, she's worked her booth there. So it's fun because I'm walking around with someone where the con floor is fresh to them again. So that's very amusing. But all in all, I had a great time.
I think I saw you for like 10 minutes. It was funny. The times I saw you was like when we came out of the bathroom, you were like sitting down relaxing on like Saturday and also on Thursday.
Yeah, I was actually just taking a minute to read a book because my feet were fucking killing me.
So I actually didn't see you on the floor. I didn't actually walk around there. I just saw you like in relaxation mode.
Yeah, outer hall.
A couple times. So we have a shout out. You know, a Patreon shout out.
So he did. So we're shouting out to our friend Steven, who I'm not using last names because unless they give me explicit permission to, I don't feel like I should. He was our first $200 tier Patreon donor. Ooh. And that is supposed to get you an advertisement
live
or
read.
A live read. You know, something like that. You can even promote your Twitter account. He didn't want any of that. He basically stated that we were the only podcast he listened to. He really enjoyed it, and he wanted to support us. So thank you, Steven, for that.
Thank you, Steven. Thank you for helping us eat. Really appreciate it.
Yes.
So we'll start on a somber note.
Sunday walking back from Comic-Con, my friend and I, my friend got a text, and he stopped, and he read it out loud to me, and I didn't believe it. And it was, of course, that Satoru Iwata had passed away at age 55 from bile duct cancer. And our reaction, and the reaction of basically the entire video game playing community as a whole, has been one of fairly outward mourning and grief. And there's a few reasons for this, I think. One, you immediately feel sad for his family and his friends, because 55 is far too young of an age to pass away. But to fans of his, he made Nintendo, especially after years of being a very tight company, he made it a very personable sort of company by directly connecting with fans. And I don't even mean that as a pun or a play on the fact that he pioneered the Nintendo Direct series and the Ask Iwata series. But he started in the 1980s as a programmer for HAL. I mean, he did things like fix balloon trips or balloon fights so that it was actually playable on an NES. He created Kirby, one of my most enduringly favorite video game characters. He single-handedly saved Earthbound 2, Mother, from the trash heap because it was an unplayable mess of code. And what I think makes a lot of people feel close to him, because when he passed away, there was outpouring from Sony, from Microsoft, from game development studios that had never put a game on a Nintendo system. This was a guy who was a game developer, who played games, who became the president of a company. And by doing that, he wasn't just some figurehead at the top of a corporation. He was the real deal. He was probably the realest deal we'll ever see in that sort of position, mm-hmm. running a company.
I think it's interesting just because usually when CEOs of companies, they usually hire from the outside. And so they'll get someone that, we'll hire someone that was either a CEO of another company or has experience in it. To have a guy that basically started from the ground up as a developer.
I think he was 19.
Yeah, and he worked on some great games. You mentioned Earthbound, Kirby games, HAL Laboratories he was at, which worked alongside.
The man was still coding. It's not like he had a huge direct involvement, but he was still putting flourishing touches on the code of things like Mario Kart 8.
So he was still get his hands dirty and get in there.
He was getting his hands dirty as recently as a year ago.
Yeah, that's insane for a CEO to do something.
That's why the guy had so much respect.
Yeah, and so basically he came into your house, all the Nintendo Directs, he come out and he was happy. Just the latest one from E3 where you know, they're all Star Fox characters. You know, it was like the trio with Reggie and Miyamoto.
But I was so happy to see, and I said it to my friend, just, you know, weeks prior to him passing, he was immortalized as a Muppet.
And yeah, that's funny.
I kind of feel like that's one of the highest honors a person can receive. So I thought that was very, very cool. You know, that he had seen so many things. He was recognized in so many ways.
He did the Iwata Ass series, which was pretty cool because, for the most part, Nintendo was always secretive about what goes on. And he sort of at least, you know, pulled back the curtain at least slightly to say, hey, this is what our mindset is, what we're doing.
People use it as research. I mean, he played Charlie Rose to people who were developing games and didn't just ask them softball questions. He went into technical detail about these things.
And then what people say about, yeah, he wanted games to be fun. Say what you will about the Wii. The Wii was a massive success. You can decry it as, oh, it's not a real gaming system, whatever. Because he had a vision that, whether you agree with it or not, he had a vision of everyone should be able to play this game, this game system. Gaming's for everyone, young, old, whatever.
Right.
Nintendo is safe now, monetarily, for decades because of this man.
And the DS. I mean, Nintendo's biggest successes were under Iwata. I mean, the DS, the Wii, the 3DS. The Wii, maybe not so much, but, I mean...
That's a big risk with the Wii. That's a huge risk.
Yes.
After the GameCube did so horribly in comparison to past systems, he said, you know what, we're going to go off the beaten track and do this Wii thing. And it worked. It smashingly worked.
Yep.
You know, that takes balls, it takes courage for someone to do that. And, yeah, even if the Wii U, it hasn't worked out the way you might have liked it to, you know, the fact that he's a guy in a position to take risks with a gaming system.
Right.
I'm not talking about, I don't even know what risk Sony's taken, but to have, you know, the only risk that Xbox, Microsoft's taken is, oh, we're going to use, you know, the Kinect as operate your TV.
The only risk Microsoft took was threatening to take away your ability to sell used games, and that
exactly.
And that backfired. I mean, and the thing is even if the Wii U did not sell the numbers, you know, they may have hoped for, he's still at the base level, and I don't think anyone can argue it. He still succeeded in putting out a platform that is home to games that anyone can play and everyone enjoys.
And like we talked about that poll about what you think about the game systems a couple months ago, remember?
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, Nintendo's like the fun system.
Right, that's where you go for your fun.
That's where you go for your fun. It may not be the system you go to blow people's heads off, but you go there for your fun.
Yeah.
You call them kiddie games, you can call them whatever. Games for all ages, like Splatoon, but these are the games that at least are different enough that Nintendo will always have that little niche carved out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to go away. You know, there's no reason for Nintendo not to put out systems, at least handhelds, for the next 100 years. You know, and I mean, people remember he was the first CEO that wasn't part of the original like line.
Yeah,
family.
The
line.
First one without the Yamauchi, the last name.
Yeah, so they took a risk doing that as well. We talk about the Japan culture, like to do something like that. They must have loved this guy enough to put him in charge of a company that's been around since the late 1800s. You know, that's pretty cool.
Small town boy makes it big.
Small town boy makes it. So, Satoru Iwata, we salute you. Gone at age 55.
Thanks.
This was something that is widely known that this was in development. There was pictures of it like in Nintendo Power and other magazines, you know. But it was never actually like seen by someone with their own eyes. So the Nintendo PlayStation prototype was found in kind of a surprising way.
So I was just going to say, there was 200 of them made, which is not
supposedly.
Many. Supposedly 200 of them produced.
And I'll get into that later.
And when the partnership between Sony and Nintendo broke down somewhere around CES 92, because I believe it was discussed at CES 91.
It was supposed to be a CD-ROM add-on.
Yeah.
Originally, they're going to do a CD-ROM add-on for the Super Nintendo, and then this was going to be the PlayStation, which was just going to be like an all-in-one Super Nintendo and PlayStation full CD-ROM system.
So, yeah, it was found because the guy who found it, his father was a maintenance man for a company.
Dan Diebold found it.
That was headed by a guy who was working for, I believe, Sony in their division at the time that was happening.
He was His father was a maintenance worker.
Oh, his father was the maintenance worker.
At Advanta, yes. Corporation in the 2000s, the president of that company was Olaf Olafsson, who was the former CEO of Sony Interactive Entertainment. So somehow, that came into his father's hands from Olaf.
They were just they were instructed to destroy it all when the company that his father worked for went bankrupt. But according to Dan, his dad never got rid of anything and was loath to throw things out. Mm-hmm. So when he found one in a box, he took it home and stuck it in the attic. And that's the story as to how at least one of these has been saved.
So this was originally it was posted on Reddit with pictures. People didn't believe him. So Dan then did a YouTube video. It's about 2 minutes long.
I saw that.
If it's a hoax, it's a damn freaking good hoax. I'll just say that.
It looks like a legitimate console to me.
Yeah, it'd be very hard. I can't imagine people go, "Oh, you could 3D print that." Not really. You can't.
No.
Something like that. No. The amount of money to hoax something like that. We're talking even the Super Nintendo had yellowing on it. The Super Nintendo portion.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, okay. Fake that.
You're going pretty far to yellow the console.
Pretty good fake. So it's interesting because there's also one controller, and we'll get into it. The controller had PlayStation on the front.
But Nintendo on the back.
Because it was just the mold.
Yeah.
But the console just had Sony and PlayStation on it. So originally people were like, oh, this is fake because the pictures we've seen had different fonts. But other people were like, oh, no, we've seen pictures with this font as well, this more plainer font, which ended up closer to being the actual PlayStation system font for their logo. It's interesting. You know, it has a tray in the front. It has the controller ports. It's a combo system. It looks like it. So being that there was no AC adapter, Dan in the video said he was afraid of turning on and frying it, which is good. You probably want to start with as low amp and wattage, and volts as possible, and sort of work your way up until it turns on, just in case.
Well, I believe there is danger in plugging in something that's too low on one of those. But anyways, what he said he's going to do is he's going to take it back home because he went to go see his parents. His dad, he got the system. He's going to take it back to his friend who works at a video game store, and they're going to find an appropriate AC adapter for it.
Yeah,
of course.
You can go to the one thing Radio Shack, if they're still in business, still sells. They sell like universals
that
with different voltages.
Yeah, they have everything.
That's how I got my one for my Turbo Duo.
Sure.
Radio Shack. So they'll find it. What was interesting, though, was that unfortunately, Dan didn't have a Super Nintendo where he can take out the freaking tabs and try whatever was on that cartridge that came with it. Even if it was just a logo saying, Sony PlayStation on it, Super Nintendo, that'd be insane to see that.
These are some of the things, and I do believe it's real. I want to believe it's real, but there's a couple things that make me
Just cautious.
One is, you couldn't find a Super Nintendo that you could modify just to test that out, really? You couldn't? You don't know anyone with one? Two, it's been stated that he said there's a CD for it. I haven't seen a single picture of the CD. How does he know there's a CD in the system?
So those are two things that might lead you to believe, okay, this could be weird.
Yeah, but the thing is, I feel like the build itself looks so legitimately like a combo system that could have come out in the 90s that I do want to believe that it's real, and I am leaning towards thinking it's real. But yeah, the lack of no, you don't know anyone with a Super Nintendo, and the lack of a picture of a CD that you say that exists. Are you either just assuming there's one in there, or have you not bothered to take a picture of it?
So yeah, Nintendo PlayStation Super Disc was, I guess, going to be somewhat the name of the console. I spoke to my friend, super collector Steve Lin, who is obviously interested in stuff like this.
Of course,
he is. History. And talking to him, he's like, "Yeah, it seems legit. There's no reason now." And even if you look on the back of the console, the ports are not exactly the same, but it's somewhat similar to how the PS1 ended up being, how the ports are.
But there's still a Nintendo-style AV on the back of it, and there's also a early PlayStation-style generic AV on the back of it as well.
Which was the original?
You could use as a CD player.
Which how the original PlayStation had before they got rid of it, the AV
exactly.
Composite.
So, yeah, I do think there's a lot of things pointing this in the favor of real. I'm wondering why certain steps haven't already been taken.
Well, he's probably not a video game guy. He's probably just got this like, oh, this is...
I think he actually says that in his YouTube video, is fine.
It's fine. So this is going to end up in someone's hands for a lot of money. At this point, it's just how much money?
A lot. So much money.
Talking to Steve, he said there... I didn't realize this, probably more so in Japan, that there are, like, Sony collectors, people that collect Sony merchandise and things. So for them, this is you're going to have... This is the rare item where I spoke about it on Retro Game Road shows before live, where when you get a crossover item, it either means that you're going to have less interest because it's two different things together, like, say, a signed Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball. Baseball collectors might be like, eh. But in this case, it's technology, Sony, Nintendo, PlayStation. This is like,
this is like, you know, this is the granddaddy. This is the holy grail. I hate saying that. The holy grail of, you know, video game hardware, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? You talk about those systems that were never came out, like all the Atari system, like the Cosmos. You know, and you had like
that only existed ever in a wood mock-up.
The Sega Neptune, stuff like that. But this is something that I think this interests people a lot more.
You know, well, I mean, you have two companies that are generally not known for working with anyone, especially Nintendo. That, I mean, and this is their one clash right here.
So also talking to Steve about why, you know, you can always, why Nintendo sort of got cold feet and backed out of this deal, then decided to say, oh, we're going to, you know, do this partnership with like Philips, you know, instead.
Well, from what I heard, it was because Sony wanted basically entire control over the system. They would allow them to take control over the cartridge portion of but Sony was going to run everything on the CD end of it and basically run the console end of it, too.
Being that the CD-ROM technology at this point, especially for gaming, was still sort of fresh, early 90s, it sounded like Sony at least wanted some sort of royalty for the CD-ROM games. So, meaning that every game that Nintendo sold, you'd have to pay Sony.
Right.
The same way, like, Blu-ray had to be licensed out to Sony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Blu-rays is a technology that Sony owns.
Yes.
So they wanted to control the media. Sounds familiar with your shitty memory sticks, Sony, that were terrible? So Nintendo got cold feet maybe because of that, but also, I think once Nintendo sees this system, they're like, wow, this is not a Nintendo system. There's no Nintendo branding on this prototype anywhere.
Right.
We're losing control.
Like, Nintendo is not a company that wants to lose control of anything that they're involved in. Especially not at that time.
Oh, sure. Sony PlayStation, it's a Super Famicom controller, but it says Sony PlayStation on it, which is interesting. I think just faking that alone would cost a ton of money. That's not a sticker. You look at that. That was made specially. You know what I mean? Like, so, if it's a hoax, it's a damn good hoax. And so I guess we're going to see where it ends up. It belongs in a museum, which it does.
It does.
But let's see if it works. Let's see what's on that purported CD. Let's see what's on that freaking cartridge.
Yeah, even if it's just freaking demo logos, I want to see them. I just want to see them.
We
want
to see them.
That's it.
I want to play it. I want to see it. So, good old PewDiePie, who's the biggest YouTuber, always got 40 million subscribers. It came out on a few different websites how much he made money. Last year, I think it came out, he made between, I think, $3 and $4 million. And it's been revealed that he made $7 million the past, I guess, calendar year. I don't know how this information gets out. First of all, that's sort of strange how that would even get out. Because only at the end of the day, the only people would know would be the network he's on.
Right.
Unless someone... you can always guess based upon how much of views, but to have such a specific number like that is just sort of surprising. So his name is Felix Kjellberg. He's 25 years old. He's been doing this for, I think, 3 or 4 years at this point. Maybe five. He's a famous Let's player. He's when you think of Let's Plays, you think of PewDiePie. You can talk about the quality of his content, whether or not you like it or not. He has a legion of fans, and he's obviously very successful. So he felt the need to respond, though, in a video about wealth and money. And obviously, of course, he's not going to say something like, oh, money's bad. Of course, it's good to have money. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. You deserve all the money you make. But my question is, why would you need to address it? You know, it's not like a sports star comes out and has to say, hey, I'm making $20 million a year, and, you know, I work hard. The fact that he had to do it is, I don't know if it's a watershed moment for recognizing YouTube as entertainment or not, but it's certainly strange to have to address it. If I'm making multiple million dollars a year and have people saying to me in my comment section, oh, you're not doing real work, I'll be like, okay, that's fine, I'm still making millions of dollars. So I don't know, maybe he's insecure with the fact that he's making these millions of dollars that he has to address it. But to me, it doesn't come off. It's not a good look. We'll just say that to sort of address it like that. At least to me, I just think it's a little strange.
I personally didn't think it came across as bad as you do. But then again, I have absolutely no investment in this sort of that sort of universe. I mean, I barely even know what he does. You said Let's Plays, and had I thought for a minute, that would have come to my mind. I'm sure. I'm not sure why he would feel the need to address it either, other than the fact that maybe you're right. Maybe it is time for people to realize that, yes, this is a way that people make money.
And it's not going where people say, oh, this is going to go away. It's not at this point. Right. It's a new media. It's been around for 10 years, and it's only growing.
People get upset at him, but, you know, similar, I think, in ways to something we had talked about previously. It's not... It was... He makes this money because people like him, and mm-hmm. he gets the money. And because of that, people attacking him is probably going to, if a person thinks about it for a while, it's probably going to rub him the wrong way. But at the same point in time, yes, you're right. He should be less concerned about having to make any sort of defensive statement about it.
Sure, this guy gets probably 100,000 comments a day.
Right.
So how does he even track it?
I thought he turned comments off on all of his videos.
There was a point where he did turn comments off. I don't know, because he wanted to then focus on the positivity and then link to a forum where you could do it. I don't know if he's still doing that. I don't follow this guy's
career. No, I don't either.
All I know is he's famous for... he was on South Park last year, and he screams a lot, and that's his content, which is fine, again, if you're into that. I don't care. I honestly don't begrudge him. Make as much money as you want. Go for it. But in terms of... He, in the video, picked out certain comments and responded to it, and... And it's like that. It was just petty when you're the biggest YouTuber to call individual people out.
I did think that was fairly petty. I don't think he needed to do that. I do think the fact that he, mentioned that the money is obviously nice. He didn't necessarily go into this for money. He dropped out of college, got a computer, worked at a hot dog stand, whatever. Gave the story. I mean,
well, he could do that. Because he comes from money. He doesn't come... He's not a pauper.
Well, why did he work at a hot dog stand?
Because he wanted to. That's why.
He didn't seem like he wanted to. But anyways, all I'm getting at... I have no reason to defend the dude because I don't watch him and I don't give a fuck. But I just didn't see the videos being all that bad. And I don't think there's anything wrong with him making the money he makes. And, I mean, I didn't like the way he came across. But, when people do say... Do I think that necessarily that sort of act deserves that kind of money? No, but if that's what he's making, then fine. Well, he deserves the money because people like him.
It's what the market
right. It's what the
picks.
Market wants. So it doesn't make sense to me. Fine, but I understand why he makes the money. But he said, why are you making this much money when blah 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 is so much more talented? Then that person needs more exposure. That person needs more views. I mean, it's very simple. It's very cut and dry.
Sure.
Like I said, you're right. There he did not come across particularly great.
He also didn't come across when he mentioned his charity works, and he does do good charity works. And it was just a little strange.
It's never good to throw charity work in the face of people.
No, it is not. And that's where I think we'll be on the more same page. He's like, he complained about the lack of publicity for him doing charitable works.
Yeah, no, I'm completely on board with you there.
He's like, why wasn't there publicity when I helped raise $1 million a year? Come on.
Right.
That's not the fucking point of you doing it,
Yeah, so, I mean, while it is great that he does do charitable works, throwing charitable works in the face of others is never a quality idea.
No, because there's plenty of celebrities that do charity stuff you never hear about.
Yeah.
People give millions out of the way, you don't hear about it because that's not the point
right.
of doing it. Speaking of that, we're doing the... No. No, so, I mean, I don't know what else to say. He's probably a nice dude, but the problem with... And we can talk about this later, is that there's an immaturity attached with... in general, and I'm not putting a negative connotation on that, there's an immaturity attached with a lot of these YouTubers, because a lot of these guys started in their teens or early 20s.
Right.
They get big, they get a lot of money, they really don't have any real-world experience working
this at it. This is a conversation for another day.
We're going to have to hold it, yeah. But just real quick, they don't have a lot of experience, socially or working in, an office environment to know that, first of all, what they have, but also how they got there. And so some people, when they get a lot of wealth or fame quickly without having to really say work hard for it, they don't know how to handle it.
I'll say more later. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
This came up. This was not totally fresh news, but it's ongoing now.
So this is old, but it's still a topic that should probably be discussed. Rose Colored Gaming, a site that does a lot of repros, and quite frankly, they do some custom. Handheld systems like Wonder Swans and Neo Geo Pocket Colors that are absolutely gorgeous. They decided that they were going to put out a repro of a unreleased Super Nintendo game called Shadowhawk, based on a Image comics character from the 90s by Jim Valentino. And they did this run and they sold it, and in April, Jim Valentino wanted to sue. And he wanted to sue for quite a bit. He wanted to sue for losses, then he wanted to take all of their profits, and then he wanted $2 million on top. That's how you start in a case like this.
You're not going to get $2 million.
Because you're not going to get $2 million. You just have to aim for the top and watch it go down.
Well, not just for the game trademark, but also I think they use images from comics
in the
materials they put out.
Yes.
From old comic scans or whatever.
So what it really comes down to is this very gray matter that I constantly feel very weird about when it comes to reproductions. Especially reproductions that are based on creative properties that are ongoing or that people still hold their trademarks to.
Mm-hmm.
You are profiting off of someone else's work in one form or another. And in this one, it's different than a game that was abandoned by Sunsoft. This is a game that was abandoned, but it's also based on a comic book character that a guy is still trying to make some sort of livelihood off
this of. This is a double whammy. This is both trademark and copyright infringement.
Sure.
It's both.
Right.
But all the other repros are copyright infringement. Those are copyright works they don't have the rights to reproduce and sell and make money off of.
No.
This is both. And this is a guy, we always talk about, you have to protect yourself. Say Jim Valentino doesn't protect himself here. He's thinking about, this is my property. Not saying there's going to be a Shadow Hawk movie anytime soon.
No.
But there could be something that comes up. Whether it's a new comic, new cartoon,
reboot or
toy line. He has to defend his creation. That's just the way it is. And is he making an example out of these guys? Probably. But maybe something happened in the negotiations, or people saying he signed off on it, other people saying, oh no, that he didn't sign off it, but people led us to believe he did, that are involved with the project. It's a mess for everyone involved. Because it sounds like someone probably lied to the other people in the group working on this project, saying, oh yeah, Jim said this is okay, when obviously it wasn't.
Well, this is not exactly a professional operation. And I'm sorry, I enjoy some of the stuff Rose Colored Gaming does, but This is a hobbyist thing for the retro community. I can't imagine there's a whole lot of in-depth business talks with these people to make sure everything's squeaky clean.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know exactly the story behind it, but overall, I would have to say that this is not a practice that I'm particularly fond of.
Well, no. And like I said, we mentioned how it's bothersome to me that people are doing this. Like we said, there's an NES port of Leisure Suit Larry that's out there and sold. And they obviously, even if it's a homebrew, they don't have the rights to do that and sell it, you know. But they did it, which is fine. But people might come after you, and it's your legal right to. That's always in the back of your head. Even if there's an unproduced NES game, the copyright's still held by someone.
Right.
Up to 70 years after the author's death, the copyright's good. So even though it hasn't happened yet, it can happen.
What bothers me even more about this, though, comes from a video game preservation standpoint, is that they chose to make money on this before releasing the ROM.
Oh, that happens all the time, though.
Yes, but I fucking hate that.
Oh, I think it's disgusting, too.
I think it's gross. And that's actually, in all honesty, that's largely my problem. We are going to hold this ROM hostage. We are going to show you a couple screenshots. We are going to sell you what is likely to be a very overpriced reproduction based on someone else's work. And, I mean, where's the ROM go? You haven't preserved anything. You have still put it on a physical cartridge that can be destroyed.
Well, it's preserved
somewhere
on their computer, but not to the public.
That's not proper preservation. That computer goes away. Those multiple computers go away. I mean, it needs to be out. It needs to be reproduced.
On the someone can always take their cartridge and dump it, but it's just they have to do that.
It needs to be replicated.
It bothers me, too. It bothers me, too, just because people are like, prototype is, it's weird because there's like a handful of people that end up buying like 90% of the NES prototypes, and then they dump them all the past few months. The price goes up, and the price comes way down when you realize that there isn't a huge amount of people interested in the prototypes. Now, when it comes to unreleased games, though, yes, they do see it as a profit-making scheme. They're like, oh, okay, we can sell a couple hundred carts of these. This is what our profit will be, blah, blah, blah. Then we might release it if we can get our profit back, or at least make back our investment. But you don't own the rights to that game. It's not yours.
Right.
That's the problem. So even though it's not legal to even sell reproductions no matter what, without the author's permission from the game or whoever owns the rights to that, to hold the ROM hostage is really shitty.
Yeah.
It's just shitty.
Legality or not, legal or not, if you put the ROM out there and then offered to sell reproductions to people who wanted it on a physical medium,
fine.
That's a gray area where I'm okay with it, but at least don't immediately profit off of someone else's shit. Get it out there, preserve it, let other people have it, take a crack at it, and then if someone wants to pay you for it on a cartridge, then okay, I guess.
I mean, I think they're lucky. They're lucky that Nintendo's never gotten after like Retro USB for doing, you know, Nintendo World Championships reproductions. You know, like all it takes is one day of them turn around and say, "Oh, this is bullshit. Let's do this." You know, but Nintendo usually is hands off when it comes to that stuff.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. All it takes is one case like this for everyone else to say, like, "Oh, maybe we should be more careful." But again, like I said, again, this is sort of an individual, one man, Jim Valentino, that owns the rights to this character he created. Not saying whether or not the character is good or bad. He's like a Wolverine guy with claws, basically, in a silver suit. I hated Image Comics in the 90s.
I was just going to say, Image Comics now, top of the line shit. I mean, amazing stuff. In the 90s, no. Just no. Bad stuff.
Yeah, obviously you had Spawn, which was popular. I think Spawn's the only ones that's still around from the 90s, I think, right?
Spawn was in it? Yes, Spawn. Okay, Spawn was in it.
Spawn was a big one.
But he also had, like, Bloodshot and...
No, Bloodshot was Valiant.
Well, Exo Manowar was Valiant.
That was Valiant.
I thought a lot of Jim Layfield's...
That was all Image. All the Wildcats and shit.
Oh, I'm
like
sorry.
That.
I got Bloodshot confused then. Yes, all of Jim Layfield's stuff was on Image.
The muscles that are on top of muscles sort of look.
Comic-Con joke. He was sitting at his booth, like, not doing fucking anything in Artist's Alley.
Oh, really?
And I've got a couple beers in me, and I look at my friend, and I said, "Should I go ask him to draw me a foot made out of utility pouches?" Because that's like...
Oh, the Captain America?
All he knows how to do is draw utility pouches, and the one thing he can't draw is feet. All his characters have no feet, so I wanted a foot made out of utility pouches.
You should have done it. I didn't know he was even there.
He was there. He was away from the booth most of the time, and even when he was there, honestly, there were not many people there.
There must have been sort of an Image Super Nintendo run, because remember, there was a Wildcat Super Nintendo game somehow, and there was a cartoon. A violent cartoon they somehow made into, like, a cartoon on Fox.
Jim Lee's Wildcats.
That's right.
But yeah. Jim Lee is actually a pretty decent artist. So, I mean, whatever. Fucking A.
Alright, so hopefully, they'll probably get passed a little bit, but there's probably, for cases like this, there's probably a maximum they can get for damages where, you know, it's not going to be $2 million, it won't be $1 million, it won't be $500,000. They'll get pants though for probably, you know, who knows, it could be tens of thousands on something like this. And again, Jim Valentino is trying to prove a point. This is one dear to your heart.
This kind of, not because I've ever had anything stolen from me, but basically, there's a guy, John Sakura, who works in Albuquerque, New Mexico, as owner of a video game store, I believe, called Gamers Anonymous. He had ordered 3 amiibos from Japan, a Politana, a Pit, and a Zero Suit Samus. And I guess they were delivered to his mailbox, and someone pry barred open his mailbox and stole the amiibos. Now, these were, as far as I can tell from the story, this wasn't a mailbox attached to the store. This was his mailbox. And he goes into one of his stores, and he finds that his one of his employees had bought back 3 amiibos. The exact same 3 amiibos that he had ordered. And his store takes down the information of people who sell things, so he promptly... sent it over to the authorities. And hopefully the guy will get caught. What's interesting to me about this is, honestly, and I think he says he was lucky in here, but just how astonishingly lucky he is. I feel very bad because we get calls all the time from people in our neighborhoods, whether it's the Ocean Beach store or the La Mesa store, who have things stolen and they ask us to look out for them. And... we do, but I always tell people as kindly as I can, it is very rare for someone in the neighborhood, a thief, as stupid as criminals may be, to be dumb enough to try to sell, like, say, video game stuff back to the neighborhood video game store, mm-hmm. because that's where the person's going to call first.
Sure.
In this case, it appears that was not the case. This person was a fucking idiot.
So did he give his real name when he sold them, you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
how much money could he have made off of this to prying open a... First of all, how did he know that this was being delivered? Second of all, how did he know it was worth his time to pry open? How much are these worth, these Japanese amiibo?
I mean, Japanese ones are usually cheaper. I mean, I feel like this article has some inaccuracies in it.
It says they're exclusive to Japan, these 3?
No, they're not. I mean, they might be for now... but they're not going to be exclusive forever. I think that's basically what it is.
We're talking $120 max or so? Like...
yes, probably. But they're only exclusive for now. It's not like these are never going to come over here. So I would actually probably say imports 360. Yeah, I'd say 90 to 100. But he is very lucky that the person was idiotic enough. What also surprises me is I know that when we present a slip to someone to fill out for a large sale, mm-hmm. If it's someone who is obviously sketchy, they won't fill out the slip. They'll take their shit and they'll leave. I'll write down a description of the person, and if someone calls me, I will give them the description of the person. I mean, there's nothing I can do if they say they're not going to sell to us. I can't, but I can at least give them a description. But, I mean, at the very least, even if you're a stupid crook, most of the time when you are presented with a slip to put your information down on, because we also...
What's the law requirement? They need a license to sell to you?
No. I mean, honestly, in California, it's very lax. It's actually very lax in California, and you can basically do whatever you want. But when we do slip, it's a thumbprint. So even if they put down fake information,
there's a thumbprint. Oh, there you go.
So a lot. I'm surprised that this person. I'm happy he did, but I'm surprised that this person even bothered to fill out the fucking slip.
Criminals aren't just leaving
a trail of breadcrumbs.
Most common criminals are not the smartest.
No,
I think it's funny. Now I look at the picture of the owner of Gamers Anonymous. He looks like a younger version of the interview ticket scalper. It looks like he's like a 25-year younger version of
him. Oh, that's mean.
No, I'm being just honest. I should put up a little comparison between the two to see. He's in the ballpark. But he did the right thing, and I hope this got him to pay twice for his own stuff, but it sounds like he probably had to at least. I mean, if this seller was nice, hopefully he made him just pay what he paid for him from the guy who stole him.
Yeah.
You know, not mark it up. You know, all right, you're going to pay $140 instead of the $30 or $40 I bought it from him for whatever meth money. We are talking New Mexico, right?
Albuquerque, yes.
Breaking Bad. So we're going to talk some movie news.
Yay.
We're going to start with the non-Comic-Con one real quick. People got upset, you know, at the casting of Spider-Man for the new movie. But this is good news to me just because this shows that he's going to be in Civil War, because they usually don't cast guys 2 years out from a movie, a year out from filming a movie, because Spider-Man's not coming out until 2017. But Marissa Tomei was cast as Aunt May. Marissa Tomei is so lovely. 50 years old. People are complaining that she's young for Aunt May. Well,
she is. I mean, because that's funny that you say she's 50. I she's eternally like 35.
35, 40, right?
Yeah.
She looks fantastic still. She's a great actress, obviously. She got an Oscar for My Cousin Vinny.
I don't want to be attracted to Aunt May.
I you know what? I'll go freaky on this one.
Okay.
Why not? But remember, Spider-Man's like 15 years old. So 35 years old for an aunt's not out of the realm of possibility. Now, I know she's old as dirt in the original comics,
sure.
In most lines. But when you think about it, it really doesn't make that much sense that, you know, his aunt would be 40 years older than his parents. It really doesn't make any sense.
Playing devil's advocate here, there are a lot of people who call their great aunts aunts. I certainly called mine aunt.
Sure. If you want to say that, I guess it's never been explicitly stated. But I think it's just cool because it's fresher. And, you know, Sally Field played it fairly old. I like Sally Field in the role, actually.
Mm-hmm. Actually, she did well.
Rosemary Harris from the original Spider-Man movies, she played it, like, really old because she was really old. Sally Field was a little bit younger. And now you have Marissa Tomei. And people are joking, oh, the next one's going to be, like, a supermodel. You know, it's like, I don't 35 years, aunt. I mean, I don't know. There's more important things to be concerned about. And I think if Marvel has a vision, you know, they'll pull it off. But now, you know, you can't ever go back and watch The Wrestler or My Cousin Vinny ever again without thinking about how hot Aunt May is, I know.
Great.
Sorry.
So let's talk about that Comic-Con Star Wars behind the scenes reel.
So this was revealed, I watched the entire panel online, which again, well, there's a reason you should have went to this panel, and the one reason why I should have went online with James from 9 a.m. because after the Star Wars panel at Comic-Con, they had a freaking impromptu, or it was set up, concert for all the attendees of that panel in the Hall H, which holds about 6,000 people. They all got tickets. They walked them all to the bay right behind where Comic-Con is, at the convention center, and they all got lightsabers, and they had a fucking orchestrated concert with the big screen from the movies, and they even ended it with fireworks.
I didn't even know that. That's pretty spectacular.
You didn't know that?
No.
That was like the highlight of Comic-Con.
What day was that?
That was
Saturday?
Or was Friday. It was Friday night. So basically, the hall cleared. Kevin Smith tweeted that, oh, great, the hall's empty now for his panel. But it was totally a surprise, and it was funny because early in the day, on Thursday or early Friday, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. There's some sort of weird concert thing. Like, you could see the chair set up you saw at this stage. And you're like, I was wondering what that was for, whether it was even Comic-Con related. Turns out it was, and then the stars come out, and on the panel, you had all the new stars, and you had the original cast. Oh, Peter Mayhew, you know, they kept him in the front row. They give a shout-out. Like, yeah, Peter Mayhew, great. But you had Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford comes out, and the crowd fucking went nuts.
I have a friend who really likes Peter Mayhew, and he was
a nice guy.
He was signing pictures.
Yeah, he had his own booth.
He had his own booth, and he was signing pictures. And I'm like, shit, I'm going to get my buddy I'm going to get him a signed picture. And then I looked at how much Peter Mayhew was charging for a signed picture.
How much?
Like 75 to 100.
Well, I guess he must pay for that booth. He's been at that he's been there forever.
Sure, but I was just like,
he's getting that new Star Wars money.
I'm like, I can't.
He's Chewbacca again now.
I said, I want to, but like, it was like Sunday was the first time I saw it, and like my con funds are dwindling.
75
and I'm like,
is hefty for an autograph.
It is.
I'd do 25.
Oh, sure. If it had been 25, I would have got him the autograph in a heartbeat.
But, I think I paid 15 or 20 for Sir George Lazenby. Really, really good Bond, underrated. And yeah, actually, as a quick side note, there wasn't a lot of autograph signings, people that there that I had any interest in even seeing or walking past this year. But anyway, so J.J. Abrams came out, they talked about the movie. J.J. Abrams is a likable guy. Obviously, the cast comes out, they joke, blah, blah, blah. So then they showed this behind-the-scenes reel. The trailer's still too far away. It's going to be probably a few months. Usually, traditionally, the last trailer comes out 2 to 3 months before a movie comes out. So you're going to be looking at late September, probably, for a trailer.
I can't wait for everything to be ruined. Anyways.
Well, it wasn't ruined as much for, the other Star Wars trailers, but okay. So it was a behind-the-scenes reel talking to Mark Hamill and a lot of the stars and the new stars, just talking about the process and what's going on in this production. And a huge emphasis was placed on the fact that we're using real sets.
God.
We're using real locations. We're using models. Hell, when they had Daisy Ridley, I think it was the Millennium Falcon turret.
Yeah, it was a mechanized thing that was...
And the guy was controlling it and moving it around. And they showed the puppets. They brought out the one puppet. The first ever footage was, from this movie, at least of a puppet or creature, was J.J. Abrams was doing a charity thing, and they had this guy with like a camelback walk out, this monster creature. Well, not a creature, a nice-looking guy with a pack on his camel hump sort of back. And that came out, and it was being controlled, and the eyes and nose twitch. Yep. You're like, holy shit, this is insane. To see this, and so they went out of their way to say that this is not like the prequel trilogy.
Yeah.
Now the prequel trilogy did have very limited sets, and they did use exteriors a little bit in the first and second movies. In the first movie, they did go into a desert for the Tatooine scenes, and in the second movie, the exteriors were used a real set for the great romantic subplot between Anakin and Padme. It looked like they filmed it maybe in Italy with the nice little rivers and stuff. Other than that, though, pretty slim pickings for real locations. They built some stuff, obviously. Usually stuff was built against green screens. Giant 40-foot and 30-foot wide green screens. But for the most part, the real locations was kept to a minimum. Here, that's basically all they're doing is real locations and real sets, which is obviously fantastic.
Yeah, the only thing I have to say about it is that I get very excited for practical effects. I get very excited for sets. And what was most interesting to me was to see how excited the actors were to be working
against
on real sets with practical effects, because just think about it. You're an actor, especially. Think you're Harrison Ford, right? And you've gone through movies from practical effects through CG. Imagine how boring that shit must be to act on right now, you know? And then you get to go back to doing something the old-fashioned way, but using modern technology to craft these sets and make them look even better. There was a shot, and it's very brief, early on, where they show, like, this hulking ship, right? And they briefly pan out and show you the miniature, and, like, a little camera filming the miniature.
Nice.
And it's just, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I can't imagine making models being that much more expensive than doing it via CG. You gotta hire the artist to do it CG. You gotta hire a model maker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And hell, I'm not even saying you gotta have the guys fly it around, like, on sticks. But at least make the model and put that into the computer, and that's a lot better. One step closer than just, having a guy draw it out.
Human
eye can detect differences. People understand, like the human eye can detect differences still. We're getting closer, but you go back and even watch episode 3, The CG for the space fights is one thing, but the backgrounds are horrific.
Right, yeah, no,
they're horrific.
And that's what I've always said. That shit's not going to age well. In 20 or 30 years,
they'll redo them.
The prequel. Well, yeah, the prequel trilogy is going to look like utter shit, whereas the original trilogy is still more or less going to stand up.
They filmed it in a real, like, you know, an ice glacier. They filmed it in a freaking California forest.
Yeah, exactly.
They went to those places.
Yep.
They went to Tunisia. You know, I think it was just sort of the bad timing for, you know, Lucas always said he wanted to wait until the technology was right to do the prequels. Okay. I think it's like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. People asking if we could do this and never asked if we should do it. Should we make a character like Jar Jar Binks that's totally CG?
Right.
Should we do that? Should we make that going from hadn't really been done before to now we're doing it and it's thrown in your freaking face for an entire movie?
Now, all I can think about is Jeff Goldblum reclining with his shirt unbuttoned from Jurassic Park as he's healing.
great, Ian. I'm going to think about it, too. I'll try to get on with this. But it's interesting that...
Let it infect you.
It's not like that. It's not like Episode 3 did bad business. It did pretty good business. I'll bring up the box office mojo while I talk about this. But obviously Disney has a huge investment in this first movie. They're going to have at least one... It's going to be like the Marvel movies. You're going to have one or two movies a year coming out going forward with both the anthology of 7, 8, and 9 and then the standalone movies. They already announced a Boba Fett one's going to happen. Rogue One's definitely going to come out already next Christmas. You're like, what? Is this Christmas movie yet? There's going to be another one. And then, oh yeah, Episode 8... 5 months after that, in 2017, for the 4th anniversary of Star Wars. So Disney has a lot riding on this first movie. Not that they think it's going to fail, but they want the jaded fans like me to make sure they see it. Obviously, you're going to have kids see it. You're going to have the hardcore Star Wars fans. But there are those fans that sort of fell off the wagon like me, where it's like, okay, what do you got? Like, I'm going to see this anyway, but this was the reassurance. This was like the free hand job to say, okay, this is going to be good. We promise you this is going to be good. You're going to come see this. That's what this 3-minute reel basically looked like to me.
They still have to sell me. I am one of those fans that you're talking about. I'm one of those people you're talking about. They still need to sell me, but with every little thing they trickle out, I'm like, yeah, I think this is something I'm going to actually enjoy.
Yeah, so I wouldn't call it so much a slap in the face to Lucas. It doesn't make Lucas seem good by basically saying, oh, whatever that guy did in those other 3 movies, that's not happening this time. But again, I think it's sort of a reassurance that, okay, we heard your complaints. We realized that may have been overboard. This is what we got. So Star Wars Episode 3, now, of course, this is already, 10 years ago, there's going to be some inflation. Not a huge amount. There actually hasn't been a lot of inflation in the past 10, 15 years compared historically other time periods. But it made $380 million domestically. For a Star Wars movie, it could do better. You know, it could do a little bit better than that.
Yeah, that's not good.
So I think Disney is going to bank on doing, you know, 500, 600, 700, 800.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably what they're looking to get out of this. And plus that they're banking on this having enough momentum to going into the standalone movies and then Episode 8 and 9. So we'll see what happens.
Suck.
Yeah, it did worldwide $850 million. For a Star Wars movie, it could do better. You know, we're talking about the biggest film franchise ever. You know, it can do better at this point. So I'm excited for it. You'll see the trailer in a few months. You know, I hope certain characters don't die, but there's rumors about who comes back, who doesn't. So everyone looks great though. Carrie Fisher looked great. I think Mark Hamill looks fantastic. You know, he sort of steps in where Sir Alec Guinness
was. He aged gracefully.
Oh, yeah, he looks great. I hope he sticks around for he has a major role.
He looks big. He looks better now than he did back then.
In Return of the Jedi?
That shit butterscotch blonde haircut.
That Lego haircut that he had.
What the fuck was that?
That was really unbecoming.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, that was not the best look. He should have kept with the Empire cut. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like the supercuts look.
Hey, so let's talk about another movie. Woo!
Ian, you're excited about the DC Universe, I know.
Yeah, I love it. So, the Batman vs. Superman Comic-Con trailer came out.
Extended trailer.
Yeah, it's the extended
three
trailer.
And a half,
it was 3.5 minutes. Yes. And,
be gentle,
look, to the people who like me, I'm sorry, I just can't get that worked up about this anymore. And to the people who hate me, look, I'm just not going to talk a whole ton of shit, but I am going to say a few things about it. That was one of the most ham-fisted fucking trailers I've ever seen in my goddamn life. Illegal alien! Bleh. You killed your parents! Bleh. We really need another flashback fucking shot of Batman's parents being killed? I'm just breaking what I said. Anyways, I worked out.
People were complaining about Spider-Man having a potential third origin. Every freaking Batman movie, maybe except for one, like five Batman movies have shown his parents being shot with different actors.
Oh my god,
Batman Forever did it. You know, the new ones did with Christian Bale, and I guess they're doing it again.
And then the fucking like scene where like Superman's standing there and like it's all slow motion and the people are working. Is this the overdramatic horse shit that you guys actually want to see? It's fucking ridiculous.
It's dark.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's so grimdark. I mean, here's two things I can say positively about
okay,
this.
Okay.
One.
You let your
family. My god! No, hold on. The worst was like chubby looking Batman in the desert breaking a dude's neck because all the DC superheroes fucking kill people now.
I like how somehow he got them as Bruce Wayne. He got the "You Let Your Parents Die" newspaper.
Yes.
And Affleck's like grim, like. I'm sorry. I know he's a good actor. He sort of found a second career. I still don't buy Affleck as Batman.
No,
I
think the thing is I want to because I really don't mind Affleck, but like
I don't mind him. I just don't buy him as Batman.
And this whole Batman thing, like I said, he's wearing like this bulky ass suit and he's fighting some people in the fucking desert. Like where the hell does that come from? And he breaks someone's neck. It's like what is this shit, Batman? I mean, Batman kills. Let's be honest, Batman does kill, but.
Not as much in the comic, though.
Batman kills. I mean,
he can kill.
Something's happening off fucking panel. I mean, these people do not get beat up and magically live.
Sure.
Okay, but anyways, to just show it so blatantly in the trailer.
Ha, joke's on you, Batman, sorry.
Yeah, it's just... So, yeah, I said I wasn't going to get worked up. Anyways, I still think the armor suit for Batman looks cool with the vocoder. I might be the only person
who thinks
that.
It's like Dark Knight Return suit. They're kind of do it.
And I will say this, just in terms of trailer structure, because we've been going on about this for a couple podcasts, I still don't know enough about, yes, it's Batman v Superman, obviously, V, not verse, but they are still, I think they're still clouding enough things that at least for fans who want to see it, there may be some surprises in store. That's all I can say good about it.
I think it's cool that Thomas Wayne's played by the comedian. And Zack Snyder's Watchmen, they got the same actor, which I can't escape right now, but very good actor. I just think I'm actually being objective here because I saw all three Nolan trilogy in theaters. I saw Man of Steel in theaters, and I thought it was Ian hated it. People that call me a Marvel fan, but I thought it was okay for a summer popcorn movie. And obviously, I'm not the biggest Superman fan to say, it did bother me about all the buildings getting destroyed. Now, this is my question.
Well, it starts with more fucking destruction porn right at the beginning.
Now, this is my question, though.
Yes.
Was this story planned out from Man of Steel from the beginning, or was this story a reaction to the major backlash of fans saying, why the fuck are you having Superman in this battle destroying all these buildings and having all the people getting killed?
I can't tell.
That's my question.
There's a scene in the beginning of the trailer where the buildings are crumbling and, like, Bruce Wayne's covering someone, and they're talking about Superman having too much power, and the only thing I'm trying to figure out is this supposed to be, like, an immediate follow-up backlash to the end of that movie, which is what you're kind of saying?
Did they get the idea, like, oh, that's a good idea for this next movie? Because remember, originally, this wasn't planned. They were going to do another Superman movie.
Yes.
Then they said, oh, we want to do this Justice League thing, and plus Superman, Man of Steel didn't do the best numbers. It did decently, but they're like, oh, maybe we don't trust... another Superman movie to come out. Let's move towards Justice League.
Because it was fucking horseshit.
What do you think about Jesse Eisenberg as Luthor? Do you like that? Do you think it's intriguing at all?
Was that in the Batman vs. Superman trailer? That I'm getting them mixed up.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, no.
He appeared like 5-6 times. With his long, basically your hair.
Yep. No, I mean, it's not going to make me see the movie, but I actually found the way he was acting interesting. There was something interesting about that to me. There was. I actually didn't hate that.
He acted more like a swarmy frat boy.
Yep.
Instead of a diabolical genius.
Yeah, and if you're going to just fuck a whole set of superheroes and franchises anyways...
Just go all out.
Then at least give me one that looks interesting. And I do... I should have mentioned that before, because I was thinking Suicide Squad, which is on our docket. I do think Eisenberg's Luthor looks like a fairly interesting interpretation of the character. Perhaps not good... but at least interesting.
Gal Gadot shows up, or Gadot, whatever you want to say it, as Wonder Woman for a few shots. I've sort of, I've given her some flack for not being built. She's still not super big. She probably got in as best shape as she could with her frame. You know, she's somewhat tall, but she's still a small frame.
She just didn't look very Wonder Woman-y. I mean, she's running around with a shield and a sword, and then there's the
she's toned, but again, I saw women at Comic-Con dressed as Wonder Woman. They're like, oh, that's Wonder Woman. She's like 6 feet tall.
Right.
You know, she's an Amazon.
She's an Amazon.
That's Wonder Woman. She can kill me. So we'll see what happens with that. And then, of course, Jason Momoa has a cameo as Aquaman.
That's like the only one that I actually want to see. I'm hoping, probably stupidly, that movie ends up being good.
Probably stupidly?
Probably
that the
stupidly.
Aquaman is good?
Yes.
Yeah, I
like the idea of where they're going with that character for that movie. Like I said, once again, if you're going to fuck an entire franchise of characters, give me something interesting, and I think what they're going to do with Aquaman could be neat.
Yeah, the more I look at Wonder Woman, I don't like it. I also don't like, the fact that there's apparently no colors in Zack Snyder's universe. We don't need colors.
Oh, no. You just get grim and dark.
There's actually a trailer out there that someone took Man of Steel and desaturated it and actually brought the colors back.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks beautiful. It looks beautiful.
I know.
Do you see that?
Yeah.
Blue skies,
yep.
Blue and red popping out of, you know, how it's, mm-hmm. how, like, when they actually shot it, that were the actual colors. You know, was it? It wasn't muted colors.
Did it change the fact that he's a natural disaster? No, I don't think it did.
Oh, that was Zack Snyder?
No, Superman, because that's basically what he is in the movie.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. They have Zod show up. Someone how they got Zod's body. Luther is licking his chops, basically, over finding kryptonite, so they're bringing that in, because otherwise, I guess, Batman doesn't stand a chance. I'm just going to say this. I'm being objective here, because I will end up probably seeing this in the theater.
Oof.
I just think it looks boring.
Yeah, no, it does.
I just think it just looks boring.
Well,
from what you see, you just have a lot of, Superman is a beacon of hope for some, and he's a monster to others. Illegal alien, like you said with the sign. Oh, I don't get the metaphor there. But then, even the direction, the direction you see is just sort of average, and just the shot that's supposed to be like all the action shots, like with Wonder Woman, is like medium close up with her shield and armor. Then the shot, another medium close up. You have Superman do his heat beams at Batman, and it cuts to Batman who flies away with the grappling hook. It's like, that's the most boring way you could have shot that to me.
It's Zack Snyder phoning in Zack Snyder.
Oh, really? You think he's just totally...
I don't believe that man gives a fuck about anything.
Do you think Warner Brothers, if this doesn't do... This will do good business, but do you think that they'll have someone else do the two Justice League movies if this doesn't come out the way they want?
No. Well, yes, maybe.
I think it's sort of strange to entrust the entire universe to Zack Snyder, basically. It's basically what you're doing.
You know, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea with any movie universe.
Oh, no. Which is why I'm glad that, like, Star Wars, they're getting different directors for
But
all
they
of
are
them.
Doing different directors for some of the standalone movies.
Yes, they are.
Like, Aquaman, the reason why I'm even remotely interested in Aquaman is because it's not done by Zack Snyder. It's in his universe, and I'm worried that they're going to fuck it up by keeping it in his universe, but it's not actually directed by him.
So, any final thoughts on this great trailer before we segue to the next part of the universe, the Zack Snyderverse? I gave this a lot of flack when it was announced. This is during the Solo podcast. They announced this about them doing the Suicide Squad movie. And I was like, it's sort of a weird property to do it. I still think that. I also think it's weird that, say what you will about Marvel's TV shows. I liked Agent Carter a lot. I still don't give a shit about Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., the S.H.I.E.L.D. show. I don't care. I'll never watch that. But at least they have one universe, TV and movie together.
Yes.
DC, for some reason, they're going to have two Flashes. They have two Suicide Squads. You have the Green Arrow, you have different Suicide Squads versus the movie, whatever. So the trailer, this was leaked during David Ayer is directing this. And someone did a little cell phone.
It's like we're some sort of Suicide Squad. Look, okay, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you real quick.
Okay.
Because all I'm going to say is this about Suicide Squad, and then you can just take over the segment. I watched the trailer after it leaked. I watched it twice today in preparation for the podcast. Mm-hmm. That is the only part I remember besides Joker saying at the end, I'm going to hurt you real bad. You thinking Batman v Superman is going to be boring? This looks like the most boring piece of shit I've seen. I honestly don't remember any other scenes, and I've watched the trailer three fucking times.
Okay, I actually have a more positive view. I don't think it's fantastic. I think it's interesting that it looks like the movie is structured based upon the trailer of exploring the past of these supervillains and why they did that. They're making Will Smith's, what is he, Deadshot?
Deadshot.
They're making him a sympathetic character. Was that something that Will Smith was required to in his contract? That it's because this is going to be a Will Smith and Harley Quinn movie.
Yes.
Basically. Which is why Will Smith is surpassed to me Tom Cruise in terms of now when you see Will Smith in a movie, you know what you're going to get. And it's gonna be Will Smith, you know. So he must really have liked this script or got paid a ton of money to be in this. Because we're no longer in the times of 5-6 years ago where Will Smith automatically being in a movie means box office gold. That's sort of gone away.
No, I found it really weird. I mean, I still think it's...
They show Deadshot hugging a kid, like his child that he had. He probably used, I got to rob banks or something to help out my kid or something. So he's going to be sympathetic.
But it's still... All I'm saying is it struck me as very odd, and it still does, that Will Smith... is or somehow landed in this movie.
From kind of Suicide Squad.
It's like we're some sort of Suicide Squad.
That's what I call Close Encounter. You know, it's just like... It's like they had to give him the line. That's his contract. You must get the cheesy line of the movie in the script.
Please, please make sure you say the title of the movie in the trailer.
Which is why I didn't like Watchmen, because they called themselves Watchmen, which they never did in the comics, whatever. So, Harley Quinn was the heavy focus in here. Which to me is strange because casual audience will know who the hell she is.
No, they will. I saw more Harley Quinns at Comic-Con than anyone.
Casual.
Yes,
casual
it is.
Casual is person that lives upstairs.
Are we really going to say that Comic-Con is not casual at this point? Are we really going to say that Harley Quinn is not incredibly well-known at this point?
Yes, I will say that.
Okay, you're insane.
You want to ask 100 people like Family Feud? Name five super hero
No, but
women.
I'm just saying if you put her in front of a person, they're going to probably be like, that's Harley
really?
Quinn.
They're going to say, I watched the comic, watched the anime series 20 years ago, so I know who that is.
She's oversaturated. They put her on fucking everything. She's been in every...
What?
Huh?
What has she been in?
She's been in every single Batman video game in the past 4 or 5 years.
And that's common person. Okay.
Yes, well, it is. It's people who play Call of Duty.
Okay.
People who play sports games.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree. Okay, but I'll say this, though. She was the focus. You heard her accent a little bit. It's not going to... I don't think it's going to be as heavy Brooklyn as the anime series, but that could be a good decision, too.
It didn't sound...
I hope you got your insurance paid up. It was in there a little bit. Like...
I don't really remember anything from it, but I don't remember her sounding like anything.
She had
different.
Two lines. Okay. Like, that was one line. I hope you have your insurance paid. She's in the car with Joker. Batman's on the hood, because Batman's going to be in this. You forgot everything. So that's probably a flashback scene for how he captured Joker and Harley Quinn.
Are you serious? Batman was in the trailer?
He was on the hood of the car.
Okay.
You got to watch it a fourth time.
No, I'm just never going to watch it again because it's not fucking worth
it. I think this is interesting, but again, it looks a little mundane. I don't know if it's required to direct these things all the same way from Snyder. Like, you get Snyder's, like, sort of photo book of the shots you're allowed to do in a movie.
It's like a bologna and mustard sandwich on white bread.
Okay, so we'll get to talking about Jared Leto. He shows up finally. You hear his laugh. His which is fine. You gotta have a Joker laugh. He shows up looking shirtless to show off his tattoos, and he's torturing, if you get the snippets, he's torturing Harley Quinn, maybe before she becomes Harley Quinn. You can see it. It's not a spoiler. It's in the trailer. It's right there. He goes, I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to hit you real bad. It's a fine, for the Joker, what else can you do at this point? We'll see how it stacks up against everyone else.
Honestly, I mean, the whole shock of how bad that Joker looks is so over at this point that...
You're over seeing
I based
damage.
It basically on the performance, and that part... One of two parts that I actually remember was far less offensive than I thought it was going to be.
I just don't know why Joker has to be shirtless. I just don't understand that. He's got to show off his tats.
Because he's Leto.
There's a cool little... There's a great cartoon short that someone did about the Joker. People joke with the Joker sit down for tattoos. It's like a 2-minute thing of the Joker sit down. Oh, yeah, by the way, can you do the font in my head? Like, do they like the script cursive? Can you, like, do that? That'd be cool. Yeah, it's going to be cool. My parents are going to flip out. Yeah, bad. Like, it's the funniest little short that really... Yeah, that's how Joker's got to sit down for all these intricate tattoos. Can you picture him doing that? Probably not. You know, but that's, like I said, that's besides the point. The tattoos are in. It's whether or not Alito's performance will... Will you be able to look past that? That's what we're looking at. for that.
I'm not going to go see it, so I don't have to look past you anything. Don't care. I don't have to look past shit.
You're going to have to look past the
It was like staring at a white wall for 3.5 minutes.
I can't believe you didn't see Batman.
No, I didn't. I literally did not see Batman in that trailer. I'm not lying. I watched it 3 times.
There's like humorous elements. There's like someone with a machine gun with like a cartoon Batman mask on real quick. That's in there. You look at me like I'm crazy. I can just make up shit now.
Yeah, you could. You could tell me anything about this trailer, and I would believe you.
Devil Dinosaur somehow showed up, even though he's not DC. He was in there.
I would see it then.
You see Devil Dinosaur? So this comes out, looks like August 5th, 2016. This will be like 3 or 4 months.
This comes out of my ass in just over a year.
I think Batman v Superman comes out like March, so it's like 4 or 5 months in between.
Yeah, I did notice that the release dates were actually pretty close. So
they don't want anywhere near Civil War in May, and then you have Doctor Strange, I think, in July. Something like that, is the release schedule. Or April and July, something like that.
Can I talk about a trailer that excites me?
Talk about Ian. Talk about this is now. This is the 50th episode. I want you to be happy about a trailer.
I am so happy about a trailer.
Why is Ian always so negative about them? Ian hates everything.
I don't. And one thing I don't hate is Ash or Evil Dead. So I'm actually really goddamn excited about the Ash vs. Evil Dead trailer. Man, am I excited
for
this.
Upcoming Stars TV series.
I am 100% going to pay whatever money I need to pay to my cable provider to put Stars on my very basic cable. So, Evil Dead means a lot to me. I actually, as a kid, my dad let my younger brother and I watch Army of Darkness. And I fucking loved that movie. That movie was fantastic.
It's really good.
And then I got into like late middle school, and you know I was skateboarding, and you know my friends and I were talking about movies, and they were like, "Have you ever seen Evil Dead?" I'm like, "Nope, I have no idea what it is." And they're like, "Oh, well, it's 3 movies: Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness." I'm like, "I've seen Army of Darkness," and they're like, "Well, then you need to see the first two," which I did, and I love them. I love each one for a different reason. I love Evil Dead because I think it's a good zombie movie. Like Evil Dead 2. For just the absurdity of it.
Remember, they're demons, not zombies.
They're demons, whatever, fine.
People for the comment section.
For the absurdity of it. Mm-hmm. And then Army of Darkness for the stop motion and all that cool stuff.
Oh, it was great. Just the humor of it. But it's like a John Wayne character in like a weird setting.
But I adore Bruce Campbell.
Who doesn't?
I think he's great. So... You know, he's gotten a little bit more into shape. You can see it in his arms, but he's still a little pudgy.
Well, he's a guy in his mid-50s.
He's a guy in his mid-50s. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's not an insult. He's just a guy who's getting older. But the trailer looked great. It made it look like it's going to be a good TV series. Brings back some classic elements like the chainsaw. It looks like it really... See, the thing is, they use, like, the same font, and I'm one of these people who pays attention to these things, and I was worried that it was going to try to go a bit darker, like the Evil Dead remake, which I didn't see, but
I heard it was good, but I didn't see it.
By all accounts, I heard a lot of mixed things on it, so I haven't seen it yet, but this definitely looks like it still has the very weird, but very violent humor.
Oh, this is ultra-violent.
Ultra-violent.
But still funny.
But over the top, like Evil Dead 2 was. Mm-hmm. Like, just, I mean... I loved Evil Dead 2 because, like, literally just gallons of blood everywhere, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So this... And the thing is like, when you watch Bruce Campbell in this trailer, or in anything, really, he's ever done, the man never misses his comedic timing. He never fucking skips a beat. He's just perfect at it. So this is something... Fuck all, y'all, that I am 100% looking forward to.
It's funny because when they announced the teaser like 3 or 4 months ago, I had no idea they were doing this. I'm like, what? I was like, because remember, like 10 years ago when people always ask, especially during the Spider-Man movies, because Raimi, Spider-Man movies, he put his buddy Bruce Campbell in a cameo in 3, people always go, why don't you do another Evil Dead movie? And Raimi and Campbell were like, oh, well, he's too old now. And that was only 10 years after... 10-12 years after, Army of Darkness, where they could have pulled it off still. So I said, no, he's too old. I remember one quote was like, yeah, we pull back from a crater and it's like a pimple on Ash's old ass. I remember that as one of the quotes they always said to me. Because they would always get asked at every convention, when are you doing another movie? And they're like, we're not doing another movie. We're not doing another movie. Well, they're doing a series somehow. So I guess the timing has to be right for everything for something like this. Where I guess it's 20 years old. It's now nostalgic for it. You know,
well, you got to think, you know, both these guys have slowed down in terms of what they're doing. People have probably stopped asking, so they're probably no longer quite as sick of being asked this question. And you can do a TV series with a smaller budget.
Smaller budget, but you have more creative freedom in terms of storylines and character arcs.
Exactly.
I'd rather see. I don't want a Star Trek movie. I want a Star Trek series.
Yes. You can have a longer. You can have a longer arc. You can do more things with the storyline and the characters. You can flesh them out. So, I'm not kidding. My basic cable plan is crap right now. We got basic cable because it made our internet cheaper. But if we want to add like a station to our basic cable, it's like $28 a month. But if this is not on Hulu Plus or Amazon or something like that, like almost but I mean like almost immediately after the episode airs, I'm gonna fork over the money until the season ends.
I think you're going to be in luck, or else you can come over here and watch it. You know, I'll DVR it for you. We can have Ash vs. Evil Dead date night. We don't have enough date nights anymore.
That would be cute.
We don't do tacos anymore together. It kind of
because I work every Tuesday.
Well, you know,
tacos are on Tuesday.
Well, it's Taco Monday too.
Is it
half apps all day?
Oh,
on Monday. I told you that. Yeah.
Calamari.
Anyway.
Good calamari.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's interesting that it'll be interesting to see if an actor coming back to a role 20 years later will be able to. Be able to not play himself as much as that character. People were complaining, oh, it seems like it's not the Ash of old. Well, it's 20 years later. It's going to be hard. And plus, well, maybe Bruce Campbell doesn't want to play as directly gung-ho and over-the-top machismo as he did, you know, in 93.
Sure, to a degree, a lot of Ash was just Bruce Campbell. I mean, yeah, obviously he was adding layers on top of it, but I think it's going to be very hard for him not to deliver at least a little bit on the character, especially if they play into the fact that this is Ash aged as he should be since the last time we saw him.
Sure. Now, people were complaining that, well, why isn't this the director? This isn't, you can't do this because of the director's cut ending of Army of Darkness. He goes into the future because he does too many drops and he falls asleep for too long. I don't care. You're getting freaking Ash.
It's Evil Dead. Shut up.
This is better than a movie.
Do people forget that the beginning of Evil Dead 2 is like a completely redone ending of Evil Dead 1?
Was it just a reboot, Evil Dead 2, really?
Yes. Yeah,
really,
yeah, Evil Dead 2 is basically a reboot.
A remake.
So there is no... there is no precedent for this... Or there is precedent for this sort of thing happening.
I just love that these television stations are doing stuff like this.
Me too.
This is like the golden age of television we were in. It basically is. With HBO and Showtime doing stuff, Stars, even like AMC and A&E putting out great shows and FX. This is it. Like, this is the best TV's ever been. I'm still trying to get through the first season of True Detective. It's amazing.
I want
to
watch that.
See McConaughey
really
acting against Woody Harrelson. It's like amazing. Like,
yeah.
You would never think of that even 10 years ago. That'd be a movie.
Is that on Netflix right now?
It's on HBO Go. So you need to have a cable thing to go on HBO Go, or you might have to get HBO Go.
Yeah, I might have to. Service. I really want to see that.
It's fantastic. So this comes out in the fall. I'm excited. I just don't know if it's an hour long or a half hour show. You assume it'll be an hour, but
I would assume half. But
you assume half?
I would assume half.
So like 13 episodes, half hour sort of thing?
Yeah.
Oh, so then X-Files comes back early next year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hopefully they can reinstill my faith in that show.
Oh, yeah.
I want them to. I'm going to go into it with open arms to all the people who say negative. I am going to go into that and give it the best shot because I want that to be good.
Did you see that little 5-minute? It was a 30-second commercial, but they showed like 3 seconds of new footage where they got the flashlights going in a dark room. And you hear Mulder go, Scully. And I was like, okay, I'm in. Q&A time.
It's time for some Q&A. Andrew Cappadocia.
At Andy Cap, what's your overall thoughts on Comic-Con exclusives? Buy into it or think it's all silly? He's probably referring to Comic-Con exclusive toys for the most part.
Right.
Of which every year that there's probably at least 36 that come out.
I will touch on the toys and I want to discuss it. We can talk the toys, but I want to touch on something else too. Exclusive toys drives me nuts. Now, for the most part, these things are not... Everyone knows someone. These things are not generally as hard to get as most people think.
They make a ton of them usually.
For the most part. But, you know, I feel bad for people who go to these things and they get hung up on the exclusive toy or the exclusive bit of shelf candy that they're going to lose interest in 3 months' time because instead of waiting in line for 3 hours, instead of getting to the convention center at 5:30 in the morning to get a ticket... So that you can literally wait in line for another ticket, so that you can wait in line to get a random Lego exclusive. You don't even get to fucking choose. Why don't you just walk around and enjoy your convention?
I think it's funny how there's people that do this to make money,
they'll travel to Comic-Con.
Yeah, but I'm so glad they look so miserable.
They spend listen, people. They spend money to travel to Comic-Con. Even if they're just driving, they're spending gas money. They got to stay at a hotel somewhere and spend money to wait and get up, like you said, like 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning, to get a ticket that gives you the right to stand in line for hours at the Hasbro booth, which is basically a store, or the Mattel booth.
Lego's even worse now.
To buy stuff that you'll then try to flip on eBay. So let's say you make 100% profit on some of this stuff. I'll just say, hey, maybe you made $800 because there's a limit to how much you can buy. You can't just buy 20 things.
Some of the stuff, you know, some of these scalpers know what to look for. For instance, like the magic cards that Hasbro does every year, they go up in price every year, but you can usually flip them for 3 to 4 times. But okay. Still.
3 to 4 times.
But you're not getting that with every item.
So, okay, let's just say the average, let's just say they sell this stuff and make an average of $500-$600. $700, $800, is that reasonable? Is that low or high? $800, they make profit?
I mean, depending on how much they're buying.
Okay.
I mean, you can make a lot if you really do it. But the thing is like a lot of these items, there's items that will definitely get you money, but then there are items that are not evergreen. For instance, like say the My Little Pony from 3-4 years ago, the derpy one, the blue one mm-hmm. with the eyes. That one ended up was on sale for $25 and ended up selling for say about $100 to $120 online.
Okay.
Now, as of last year's pony, it sold for market price. The one that I got this year probably is not going to go for more than $10 to $20 more than what it's selling for. Yet people still grab buckets of these things. When you are wasting all of your time to make $10 to $20 more than what you paid, you are just an idiot.
Like I bought that crossover Transformers G.I. Joe one a couple years ago. Did I give that to Vonnie? I forget. Do I still have that?
No, you still have that.
I don't know what that even is. The point is, I think I bought it actually $10 or $20 below because a seller probably bought 8 of them and was trying to move one. I don't think those ever went up in value.
No.
They made so many of those. They produce thousands and thousands of those. So if you want one, you can get one. So my point is that even if you make... I would say most people doing this aren't making $800 in profit. They're making like $400 or $500. Once you factor in whatever your transportation costs are, food costs for expensive eating at Comic-Con, hotel costs, is it really worth it versus having a good time?
No.
It's not.
I pass on so many exclusives. But, like, I don't know. I mean, some people can make more. Like, for instance, things like, say, like the transformable Chibi Voltron this year. That sells for $150. Okay. That's going to go for quite a bit. Magic cards that sell for $120, you're going to get $600 for those. But the thing is those are the ones that are actually very, very limited that you're probably not going to get. You know, the stuff that you're going to get is the stuff that they make, like you said, a shitload of, and then you're not going to make any profit. The other thing I want to touch on real quickly is Comic-Con exclusive trailers, which actually the Suicide Squad trailer was supposed to be. And what happened was is people recorded it and leaked it to the net.
Of course.
Of course. WB scrambled for 2 days with an anti-piracy team to scrub it from the internet. And then had their director of public relations, I believe it was, come out and say that they were very disappointed that they were going to have to release the trailer in its original quality because they didn't want the pirated trailer in its poor quality representing their movie poorly. And it's like, how the fuck are you upset about people being excited for your shitty-ass movie? Like, what is this?
I thought these...
There is no benefit to that. That's all marketing. You do not limit marketing. You spread marketing out as far and wide as you can.
It's very strange just because the Batman v Superman one went up, like, the next day, you know?
And it wasn't a con-exclusive trailer.
It wasn't a con-exclusive, and that's a much bigger movie. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, Star Wars reel came out, like, almost the same time the behind-the-scenes reel. We're past that period where 3-4 years ago where, the exclusive one. Oh, you're going to see the Cowboys versus Aliens exclusive. Doesn't matter anymore. You want to get that shit out to everywhere. Yes. You want to capitalize on that Comic-Con buzz, which now it's the biggest geek event of the year. You know, like that's the main event. Yeah.
It's like my Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, I save up for it all year long. I mean, I mean, that's where you get your stuff exposed to the people who are going to care the most about it.
So I'm
going to
splice that back into the other segment, probably.
For what?
For YouTube consumption. And to when we talk about the Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah,
trailer.
Yeah.
So, next question. This is from at Fat2Rack005. Thoughts on selling a game collection and settling on just owning an EverDrive?
due to high prices. Well, Ian, you just picked up a few flash drives.
I did pick up a couple
Genesis,
other drives.
Super Nintendo?
Genesis and regular Nintendo.
Oh, right, Nintendo.
Here's my thought on it. I think if you play video games, you are going to at least have one system that you are very passionate about. Now, some people are completionists, some people aren't, but I can only speak from my standpoint. My system is the PC Engine and the TurboGrafx. More the PC Engine. TurboGrafx is crazy expensive. I have always, since the time I started collecting for PC Engine, I've only bought games I've wanted. So that when I walk up to that pile, I can close my eyes, pick something, and chances are I'm going to play it. I did not do that when I was collecting Nintendo or when I started. I was buying everything. It got out of control. I got burnt out on it. And I'm currently in the process of selling it off. So I have an EverDrive with a full library of ROMs on it. And you know what? It's just fine to me. Why? Because I get to play games that, honestly, I would never drop the money on. The compatibility is not perfect, but it's good enough. The Genesis compatibility needs a little work, but it's still good enough. I don't think it's a horrible thing if you just want to play games. I do think if you are really passionate about video games, you're going to have a system you collect for. You're going to have a niche you collect for. There are certain Nintendo games, even though I'm getting rid of the majority of them, that I won't get rid of because I love them or I have some sort of sentimental attachment to them. I think that's there is a middle point between a collector and someone who just wants to dick around with games for a little bit. But I don't think there's any real issue with it. And yes, I do realize that there are people... like, let's just say a college kid putting himself through college, for an example, who wants to play Nintendo games and can't shell out the ever-increasing prices for these games.
Or to have the space and storage.
And that's another thing for me, and I think Pat actually said that to remind me of my main reason. If not, he did. I live in an apartment in San Diego with my wife. I only have so much space. There does become a point where this shit just takes up too much goddamn room. I need that space back for books and stuff like that and for music. So, you know, it also becomes that. It's like, how do you manage the space where you live?
I'm going to start looking at practicality just because I'm at like 250 Genesis games or something like that.
Right.
I have a lot of Genesis games. Usually I say 95% from the swap meet. So it's like, I didn't spend a lot of money on it. But it's like, if I'm not playing them now, don't have the time to play them, what's the point of having them take up that space? I'm going to get to that point probably soon enough with probably the Genesis, probably N64, probably Super Nintendo. These weren't systems that I was in love with. I didn't have the N64 as a kid, didn't have the Genesis. Super Nintendo I had like 10 games for. I'll keep my Nintendo games probably always. I'll probably always keep my TurboGrafx stuff. Those are my two in my heart. The other ones, they might go at some point. They might get pared down to just my favorites, or maybe the weird quirky ones that I like, and maybe just the rare ones just to keep them. But all that middle of the road stuff, be like, I don't need to have Maximum Carnage on Super Nintendo. You know, I just don't.
I think there's a lot of people like our age too who have collected things, whether completionists or not. No, I'm not even saying old, but you just realize that having all this stuff is kind of unnecessary. I mean,
yeah.
I know people who are paring down their record collections. I'm paring down my video game collection. My wife is paring down her figurine collection. Like, at some point, you just look around and you're like,
fuck it.
How the fuck did I get all this shit?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's over 15 years. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm already thinking about if I want to move in a couple years, I got to box all this shit up. And now I want my collections now 3 to 4 times easily what it was when I moved from New Jersey, and that was a fucking pain in the ass.
Right.
The box said, this will be even worse. The only good news is now if I move, I'm going to stay more local. I can do it all myself and not have to worry about some shifty freaking company out of Bayonne that loses my most important box. That's all the discussion. So, EverDrive, it's fine. Do it. I don't have any qualms against going the EverDrive route. Be reasonable.
And to touch back on something before people try to call us, because I feel it will happen before people say we have a double standard based on the repro thing and the money and the ROMs, keep in mind that the EverDrive company is simply making the EverDrive. They're not putting anything in there.
They're not doing something illegal.
And the ROMs, you can't buy a Nintendo game and get the money to the original creators anymore. You just can't do it. It's all used. So I don't really
nothing's being held hostage.
Yeah. I don't really have any ethical issues with the use of an EverDrive either. And I think people would come at me for this too. Because I run a store, yes, I realize that, that means less people buying games, but you know what? People with overdrives, a lot of times, still buy games. They find games that they like through going through the ROM library, and they decide they would like an actual physical copy.
See,
it's like MP3s.
See, Napster was a good thing.
Yeah, it's like MP3s versus going and buying an album. You hear stuff you like, you go and you buy the actual album.
Okay, this is from at Lord Street Guru. You guys don't seem like big PC gamers. Any real reason for that? I don't know where the hell this
came
from.
This is like the biggest misconception about us ever.
I'm glad we're covering this on the 50th podcast. I was a huge PC gamer. I grew up with PC games since I was 5.
I started gaming on an Apple IIe.
IBM XT.
I played graphic adventures and first-person shooters.
Yes.
And RPGs and strategy games all through the 90s.
Yes.
I stopped gaming on PCs when it got really expensive. When I moved out on my own, I didn't have desktops, and consoles just became easier. Look, yes. I'm in the market for a new laptop, and when I get it, I'm going to buy PC games again. It's simply because you only see Pat and I talking about console games because it's not our main focus right now.
Plus, because there's not many exclusive PC games.
Right.
They come out on the consoles, and then, we'll do a shitty port on the PC. Basically, that's what happens. I'm sorry, that's the way it is now. It used to be that the best games were on PCs.
Until
like 10 years ago, the best games were on PCs. And that's the reason why I don't have an affinity for Super Nintendo. I don't have an affinity for PlayStation. I don't have an affinity for N64. Because I was knee-deep playing LucasArts games, playing Sierra games, playing awesome first-person shooters, playing Unreal Tournament. I was playing that shit.
Yeah.
Because those games were far superior to anything you could have gotten on a console, especially in the early 90s, and with CD-ROM technology.
With a lot of like Kickstarter games that look interesting to me being, you know, PC first or PC only, as I said, I will probably go back to PC. I have no discrimination against PC. I don't think it's better. I don't think it's worse. It's just another way to play games.
Sure. So there you go. We don't seem like big PC gamers. I'm not a big gamer anymore because I'm doing shit. I'm working and stuff. I wish I could play these games more. Danny, it's been too long. All right.
Brian Rawson, King of Retro. Could the divide between mobile and console gaming split the market enough to cause another crash?
I think what you're going to be looking at... mobile gaming will never take over. It's an entirely different market. You're never going to be able to emulate the control scheme on a phone for fighting games, for first-person shooters. Really, on the phone, what you got are like the freaking little puzzle games. You can do an RPG probably on a phone.
You can do a strategy game or
something.
You can
do a strategy, but you're sort of running thin on what you could do on a phone.
But the thing is you can do some of these things well with a touchscreen, but you don't find developers that are putting a lot of effort into making a good one that gives you the same experience that you would get on a 3DS or even a home console.
Probably because, for the most part, freaking Game of War aside, the vast majority of these mobile games won't be as profitable as putting out a AAA game. So it's like, why would you flock to... obviously, microtransaction games can be huge, but for the most part, it's probably not comfortable not knowing that I got to put out a 99-cent game. I can develop all this time, putting all this time for a 99-cent game, and we'll see if it does well or not, versus I know I want to put out this game for $60 on Xbox One, and I know how much money it'll probably make. I always see them being separate. I'm never going to see this being, Nintendo should have just go to mobile games. No, they shouldn't. They really shouldn't.
I also see them as separate. And while I don't think that either are necessarily going to crash, if there was ever going to be a sea change or a crash with video games right now, I would see it not on the console side, but on the mobile side, where people get fed up with that sort of current structure, mm-hmm. and things have to change.
Yeah, if the microtransactions go out of whack, if people all of a sudden say, oh, great, you took down my game I played for like 5 years, I put it on a server, like we talked about before, I'm pissed now, I'm not going to do this ever again.
Well, I mean, here's a good example. Puzzle and Dragons on the iOS, very popular. You can only play it for a little bit at a time, or else you have to pay for microtransactions to refill your stamina. Hey, guess what? They released a version of it for the 3DS that has two versions of the game on it and no microtransactions. People see more of that, and they're going to realize that, there is value in these games on these consoles, sure. as opposed to constantly trying to fuck with,
plus
maximizing my time on this game.
Kills your battery in your phone. The phone you still want to use to call people.
Yeah.
I know we have iPad stuff, but people still usually use phones for their mobile gaming.
I just put this... I just put this question on here because I just thought it was funny. There's no real answer here. This is from James Stundis at Chemical Who Boy. In the Bat Super trailers, do you think that...
Do you think Zack Snyder is talking about himself and not Superman? Very clever, James.
You're a funny man, James.
Very clever.
And yeah, probably. Rob Cass. What's the most important thing you've learned over the course of 50 episodes? Congrats, by the way. I think...
most one thing we got to choose?
Most important... what's the most important thing? Let's just say things. One, I think, is that we've learned how to banter better in terms of timing.
That's the most important thing we've learned?
Well, for people banter? Who are listening...
That's true.
Sure. I'm not saying, like, our banter in terms of how we talk to each other, but our timing, we're not yelling at each other at the same time as much.
Yeah, like that.
Okay.
I think me and Ian have this sort of a, you know, you look at those graphs of circles. We probably overlap for like 80% of sort of topics for the most part.
Let's go 70.
Just to be an asshole. our code just got pulled apart because of that. We don't agree on that. But for even the stuff we disagree on, we can be civil about it. You know, we're rational individuals. We're not going to cast aspersions at each other. We never got visibly angry at each other too much on the podcast.
Not often.
Now it's coming out.
No, I'm just saying not often.
Not often. But I think what's important to civil discussion is that you remember that opinions don't necessarily reflect what the individual is. For the most part, and that when it comes down to it, your beliefs about something or opinions about whatever, as long as you're a good person, what you believe, at least to me personally, that's secondary.
Sure.
You treat people well, that's more important. You can believe in the best shit on earth, but if you treat people like shit or are a bad person, that doesn't matter anymore. Not to get too philosophical, because I've seen that happen. I've heard of quote unquote feminists behind people's back talk shit about women and treat women like shit. You know, it's just like, so saying you're a feminist, it doesn't really matter anymore. You know, or even the opposite. You have people that are very religious or believe they're very religious and believe in the most horrific stuff. You know, and then go out and yell about it. So I mean, be civil. That's what I learned. Not that I was ever not civil with Ian, but you know, you get to learn about a person's personality more, I guess, talking to them. Not that me and Ian always had good conversations, though, even before the podcast, and that's why, you know, that fateful day, I'm like, hey, let's do this. Ian, let's, you know, you're good, let's do this.
You know? I think we could argue over how it came about. But
I walked into Luna and I said, you should do this with me.
I recommended it to you like a year prior.
Well, then at the time, I thought it was a horrible idea, so it didn't count. It was terrible.
I mean, for me, I, you know, sometimes my emotions get the best of me. I'm a very emotional person, but I've learned to tone it back. I agree with what Pat says in terms of, you know, opinion, especially heated opinion in a debate or opinions in a debate or a discussion, do not necessarily, reflect a person's true personality. And I do want to say, not to sound silly, but I think a lot of listeners have probably learned over the course of 50 episodes that you and I are not exactly who we appear to be all the time on the podcast, too. We are simply sitting here, debating, and casting out opinions.
Sure. I mean, there's a degree of acting even when you're doing a radio show or doing a podcast.
I don't feel like I'm ever acting, but sure, there's probably some acting.
We're not acting, but we're still putting on a performance.
Right, exactly.
Sense. Like when we do the marathon. We're not acting, but we're still doing some sort of performance.
We know we're on camera. At this point, I've become aware of that.
Your personality doesn't change, but it sort of shifts to the environment. Let's just say that. But if you meet Ian and I in person at a convention or whatever at Luna Video Games, two locations in La Mesa and Ocean Beach, buying and selling retro games.
Thanks.
That we are who you think we are for the most part. Like this is it. Like this, we're not gonna talk about shit that we don't believe in or give opinions we don't believe in. We're not gonna say stuff just to get hits. We're not gonna say stuff that we think our audience is gonna like. We're gonna hopefully challenge. There's lots of videos where people hate Ian.
He thinks it's only him, but no, people have hated on me. I got tons of shit. I had people making videos about me because I tore down talking about, the Smash Brothers, the two different modes, competitive versus people got on me for that. And at the end of the day though, it's like, we're not going to just spoon feed you bullshit. That's at least what I think. We're not going to spoon feed you what you think. We think you should hear. Sometimes we'll debate each other, but even if we don't debate each other, even if we agree on a subject, I'll try to play devil's advocate or do a spin. You'll try to come out at a different angle to at least bring something to the table that you wouldn't expect just from saying, "Oh, I'm going to talk to you about something for 5 minutes, and it's exactly what you think I was going to say about it."
We reflect who we are on the podcast. Accurately, and we don't fuck it up, but in real life we're also not quite as amplified. I think anyone who's met any of us at a convention realizes that I'm not going to stand there and yell in their face about Batman and Superman if they want to bring it up. I do in the moment with you because I feel passionate about it at that moment, but if someone really comes up to me and wants to talk about it, I can't get that worked up about it.
I do things to you, Ian. I know. Yep. That's what you've learned. You've learned how passionate I can make
Christ.
You. Okay, so we're gonna go to. We'll do before the memories. We'll do what people have gotten us over the past month. The gifts, podcast gifts. There's a bunch of them.
So I want to start with one just before we forget
Go to your box over there.
Well, I will, but I want to start with one because there's really nothing left to show of it. Jen Castillo sent us another box.
Uh-huh.
She sent Pat some eye pillows a while back, and she sent. An eye pillow for me and for Vonnie, and another one for Pat and for Frank because she had updated how she had made them.
She updated with like a little cartoon, comic, like Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, and like Spider-Man.
I think she changed how she was doing the oils in them too. And I gotta say, those things are freaking fantastic. As a person who gets eye strain really, really easily from looking at a computer screen, those things are great. And there was a bunch of candy in there, which I've pretty much eaten all of it. And a very nice sign about sarcastic people, which I am. So that was great.
Since Frank didn't get his next Frank Crate video, you'll probably see him give me a gift. Actually, it might be one of these boxes. You might have spoken too soon. If you look in your box, it could be in there. But let's see what you got. Let's open yours first.
Okay. What did nice people do for me?
That is, I think that's yours only. I think that's an Ian exclusive.
This is from William.
There should be a note in there, too. Yep. Ian hasn't learned haste in 50 episodes, by the way.
Ian and Pat, have this thing to do a giveaway during an anonymous marathon. More importantly, Q&A time. Ian, will you please explain the video game and or comic book story? No, sorry. P.S. If Ian is not comfortable telling the story for any reason, I won't hold it against him. Thank you. If he is not comfortable, I do have another question. Pat, how has the Retron 5 operating system improved through the updates it has released since the Retron 5 review video?
Haven't updated it.
Pat can't answer that, but I can, because I have a lot of people who buy them from the store. And by all accounts, it has improved tremendously to the point where you can even put translation patches, I believe, on the SD card now officially. And if you have an import game, it will patch that ROM for you.
Nice.
Love the show. Keep it up, Will.
So what will get us?
This
is going to be a giveaway.
This is a giveaway.
That God willing, we do another NES marathon. It is
sweet. It's a World Championship cart repro from RetroZone.
With the box.
Which is really freaking cool.
And I want to keep it.
People all love right. these things. Well, you can't keep it.
I'll give them mine and make a box. Put it back in the protective.
All right, there's a
That's
going to
be thrown around my room for the next 8 months.
Not 8 months away, you silly goose.
You want to go next?
You can go.
All right. It's like Christmas. I only have two people. So you got to do more to catch up.
Okay, I will do another one.
Do another one. It's Christmas time on the CU Pod. It's like 50th gifts. By the way, if you want to send this stuff, it's CU Podcast, Care Pat Country, PO Box 7695, San Diego, California 92167. I think a note just came out.
Ian gets the PC Engine Super CD-ROM. Pat gets the custom NES cart. Enjoy, Jeremy. Well, thank you, Jeremy.
Now, this is cool. Now, I think that's the demo Super CD, which is funny because I think I have that somewhere.
This is so cool.
So I guess it was a demo that was put in stores?
Yes.
For some reason, you can find them sealed, but they're still cool. There's like five different games on there or something
I can't freaking wait to check this out. It's Falcom, too, so you know the music. Falcom and Red, so the music is going to be fantastic.
And so should we see that game?
This is actually...
So it's the Pat the Aeneas Punk Volume 1, available now on Amazon and my website, DVD. It's on my NES cart. Now I'm wondering what game this is.
Yeah, yes, that's what I'm most curious about, too.
It even has the Nintendo seal of approval. NES Pat-USA, very cute.
That's
Thank you very
awesome.
Much. What was his name?
Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy. That was very, very kind of you.
That is awesome. To do that. I like the serial number.
That's... How many more packages you got left?
I have one, two.
More than three?
Three.
Okay, then you do one more, then I'll go.
Oh, and here's one of the pillows.
Yes, there's the pillow. This is the pillow from Jen.
Yep. These things are freaking fantastic. I put them in the damn freezer.
Oh, it smells like fennel. It's so nice.
I put them in the freezer, and I just put it on my eyes before I go to bed. And then it falls off at some point, but that's okay.
Oh, it feels good. All right, you go next, Amy. One more time.
This is from Roland. Hi, Roland.
There should be a tab on the side open. Yeah, on the side.
Beep, 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 beep. I don't know. What the fuck are you talking about?
Right here.
Okay. Thanks.
There's a note in there, too.
Let's read a note. I like your graph paper. Hey, y'all. Enjoy the podcast. Keep it up. Here are some PC Engine games for Ian. I'm making out like a bandit. Why? Thank you, people. Sorry, Pat. Nothing for you. Figured you didn't need another Mario Duck Hunt or NES Play Action Football. Thanks, Roland Curtis. P.S. Ian, judging from your taste in music, you should check out some of these artists if you haven't already. Zombie, Steve Moore, hey. Major, Umberto, Transam. I love Transam. Catacumba and the Illo Suono Scuro mixes by Dark Lord Disco. I will.
Thanks Roland. Thank you, Roland. Yeah, I don't need another Super Mario Duck Hunt, but you know I would need a PC Engine game. That would have been nice. That would have been swell, Roland. What games are they?
Oh, I'm trying to remember. I should know this one. Well, it's by Riot, so I'm going to like it. Oh, Conan, the Boy in the Future.
I'd like Conan, the Boy in the
Advanced
Future.
Variable Geo, which is a lot of fun. I have played that before.
I liked Advanced.
And this, which is... I can't remember the name of it, but it's an RPG. It's like a Geiger-esque RPG.
I'd like the Geiger-esque RPG.
You would, wouldn't you?
Thanks, Roland. See you in hell.
Thanks, Roland. I appreciate you.
This is from Sean Robbins. Ooh, little Amazon gift things. All right. Well, it says what all three of them are, what the gifts are. Wow, we got two Amiibo, and I'm gonna probably say which one I want. First, we got a Jelly Belly Sour gift bag.
I will eat all of those.
No, you won't, because I want a few at least. So we got that. Thank you very much.
Candy.
We got two Amiibo.
I love candy.
Wow! Oh, wow. Jesus. He got a gift wrap for us. That's extra. You don't have to do that.
I've got gift wrapping here. Yeah.
There's a note.
Sour apple. Sour cherry.
Proud listener and Patreon supporter. Thank you of the CU podcast. Thanks. For nearly a year. Wow. Love the balance that it strikes between informative and fun. Well, that's just good marketing material right there we can use. Keep up the great work. If you're interested, I produce and host a radio show in college. Station WVCR 88.3 FM as a volunteer titled The J-Pop Exchange.
Neat.
Very specific. It contains exclusive interviews with anime, plus game composers, and a lot more. Show website is jpopexchange.net.
J-Pop Exchange all one word?
jpopexchange.net.
I will go check that out.
So let's open these up.
Are these two?
What's that? No, that's separate. That's separate, Ian.
Garrett Webb?
That's separate.
Oh, so it's just that one. Okay.
Here, you can open one, I'll open the other. There you go. But I want one specifically.
Okay, calm yourself.
I don't have any Amiibo. How do you open these Amazon things?
Is Yoshi?
Yoshi!
He's a good guy.
And this means, yeah, there he is! The most important video game of all time. There he is, Mr. Pac-Man.
You can't even rub it in my face because I've got one on the way.
I want the Yoshi now. Okay. Thank you very much. This is very nice of you.
This is awesome. I've actually been looking forward to a Yoshi.
This is my first Amiibo.
I appreciate
it. So I feel like I'm important now.
This is super cool. Oh, God, it's one of the Mario Party ones. This, I should probably pick that up. Oh, because I have a Peach Mario Party one.
All right, next Ian.
Okay.
On our 50th anniversary.
This is from Garrett R. Webb. I love watching the YouTube videos, but the quality is awful and audio is A++. I don't know if you can use these, but I'm hoping this gift. I hope with this gift you can start uploading in 1080p. I want to be able to see Ian's fantastic beard.
Okay, so basically, I don't know what to do with these. We got these a while ago. He gave us webcams, Ian.
Oh.
He gave us.
Well, that's a nice thought.
But it's the webcam we're using right now.
Oh.
It's the Logitech C920 or 30 that he got it. So,
well, I can use at least one for my own purposes.
But, or you can borrow one of the two I have if you wanted to. But we appreciate the gesture. So why it looks so shitty, again, to repeat it, is because I'm using my camcorder with a very expensive capture device for me.
These are pretty cool.
Yes, it's very cool, Ian.
I don't own one. You do. I don't care that you own them. That's not the point.
So now Ian can do his happy... Ian's happy... handhelds the show. So the other one, we'll figure out what to do with it. I can sell it for parts.
Or I can become a cam girl.
You pretend you're a cam girl?
Yeah.
You probably are in your spare time. We'll leave the other one gift wrapped. Maybe I'll give it to Frank or something. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was very cool. No, not you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next, you, or I have like 7 different packages here from one person, so maybe we can do one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Here's a note. This guy got Frank stuff too for the Frank crate, which is very cool of him to do. Hey guys, I thought I would send another gift your way. Oh, this is Kelly. So, Ian, if you land the Sega CD, you can finish your quest. I know you are a Splatoon fan, so I know you would appreciate it. I'm not sure what he's referring to there. Maybe one of the gifts. Pat, I thought you might appreciate this with your love for the 80s and montages. It even comes complete with tracking issues as well. Break the Ice and Thunder in Your Heart are a must. Oh, and I included a piece so the controller would be less of a bastard. LOL. He sent me the little piece for the NES Max that he made, the custom piece. How nice. Well, let's see what we have here first. Not too familiar with this. What's the Rad soundtrack?
I don't know.
What's Rad?
I don't know.
I guess it's an 80s band?
I don't know.
I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
Okay, well
I don't know.
I wouldn't know. All right, we'll check that one out sometime. And then I'll do another one. Oh, this is for Ian. You open that one. Ah, something just fell.
Opening stuff
from Kelly. This is all from Kelly.
I like you, Kelly.
He sent you another one.
Ah!
Son of a bitch!
Yes!
I'm so happy for you, Ian.
I fucking love this game. I was literally talking to my friend about this game on Sunday.
Yeah, you talked about it on the podcast.
I talked about it on the podcast too, but I was actually discussing it again on Sunday. Now I need a CDX. This is so cool. Thank you, Kelly. Oh, man. I've got to finally beat this damn game now.
You have any more over there?
Nope.
All right, you have another one more.
Hold on. What was this? Okay.
We have one more, and I have a couple, and we have a dual one. So I'll open the next one. Oh, here it is. Here is the missing piece from the NES Max. Kelly last time made me the joystick NES Max. And here's the thumb pad in case I want to put it back together. Thank you, Kelly. That's great. Oh, Ian's going right. He didn't even bother to wait.
Well, I thought we were just supposed to open it.
Oh, well, you just did. So you have another amiibo.
Yeah, but holy crap.
What?
It's modified. That's so cool. That looks so good.
Oh, wow. It's a... neon green and blue and orange.
I should know exactly which one this is, but I don't. But it's awesome.
Wow.
It's awesome all the same. That's incredible. Oh, my God. It's a fucking... That's so cool. It's a Splatoon Mega Man. He's got ink.
That's awesome, Ian.
He's got ink coming out of his fucking gun.
That's fantastic, Ian.
I like your piece. Now you can fix your controller.
I think this is a cruel joke. I sort of turned to a cruel joke from Kelly. Just because I took a shot at it.
Because you were so ungrateful.
Oh, okay. I guess this goes with the Rad CD.
What is it?
It's Rad on DVD.
Oh, it's a movie. I know what that is. I've seen the movie. You've never seen Rad?
No,
I haven't. Okay, you need to see Rad.
Crew Jones is the best BMX biker in Cochrane.
It's so good.
He's got the talent to become the best BMX daredevil in the world. Thank you, Kelly. Oh. It's a burned DVD. It looks like it's burned DVD. Is that official?
It's official.
What year did this come out? No, this is not official. It cannot be official.
Oh, maybe not. I mean, this I don't know if it, got, if it got...
This is like laser... this is like the...
It doesn't matter if it's official. You need to watch the damn
movie. No, I'll watch
it.
I'm just saying. You know?
It's good. It's really...
I think Kelly hates me.
It's really funny, actually, that damn movie. It's just... It's amusing.
Do I have any more?
I don't know.
We have one more for both of us. I will open it.
Okay.
Okay. I love the wrapping paper, by the way, Kelly. Oh, Jesus. This is fantastic. I have one still from a couple years ago, but... Oh, we have two packages of Big League Chew.
Oh, yeah. Man, what flavors?
Ground Ball Grape and Out of Here Original.
Can I please have grape?
I was going to say, I think I have a grape one anyway, but I'll double check. But, yeah, okay, Ian, you can have this. I love Big League Chew.
I just want the grape. Grape gum is so good.
Well, we made out.
We did.
This was totally unnecessary, and thank you. You really don't have to do this, but we'll appreciate it, and, you know. Oh, you're going right to the gum. You really are fucking 4 years old, aren't you?
I really like grape gum.
Why don't
gum.
You throw some jelly beans in there, too, while you're at it? Just sort of
like
double it up on it.
Grape gum is one of my...
Yeah, it matches your Bio Buffet shirt. That's fantastic.
It's one of my passions.
One of your passions?
It's grape gum.
So, again, if you want to send us something on the CU Podcast, it's CU Podcast, care of Pat Contry, P.O. Box 7695, San Diego, California, 92167. Ian's in heaven.
This is so good.
So we're going to get to some CU Podcast memories here. First one's from Karen. Hey, Karen, who's also helping out with the book project. At Niamla, I still love Pat's rant about his crappy days at Suncoast.
Who doesn't?
The worst job ever, once again. I worked on it, I think it was after I had my knee surgery in college, right at the dawn of DVDs for the most part. You still have maybe only 150 DVDs or less. And, yeah, we'll just have Pat rearrange the VHS or alphabetize the VHS section sci-fi. They'd get the day before, and I'll just take one and put it out of place to make sure he has busy work. Instead of what you should do for making $5.05 an hour, just hang out at a fucking video store and just goof off. We'll just make his life happen. Oh, yeah, and by the way, we'll also sexually harass him, too. We'll just do that, too, at $5.05 an hour.
This one's from Chronic Kevin at Tarnak. This is kind of an all-encompassing one. Kevin really likes the Tommy Tallarico finger cage, which I probably should be using more often. He fondly remembers the T-Rex arms, which I'm still doing to this
just
day.
Just did it 2 seconds ago.
Danny Sullivan, of course, everyone loves Danny.
Not sure what he's talking about.
I've never heard of that man. Takate, which I brought back as a throwback jersey sort of deal for tonight, being it's the 50th episode.
Throwback alcohol.
And realizing Frank is Pat's adopted father.
If only.
And the...
See You Podcast, WWE...
That was awesome.
As Survivor Series, was it?
I believe so.
That was great. Was that the one with my face on it? That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, those are all great moments. I mean, can't go wrong with those. At MSU Hitman, Ian's segment on the bad customers, little bitch. That segment got me to subscribe and still watch every 2 weeks.
I'm sorry that I don't have more. The thing is, I get so many. Like,
you got to write them down.
Yeah, I do.
I know you write a lot for the CU Podcast Patreon.
Yes, I've been getting better at that.
Have you? I don't know. I don't. You know, keep track of you like I should.
Yeah. The second thing, I have so many of those bad stories. People love them. I try not to always rant about things that suck. But, yeah, I mean, working in retail, I meet a lot of good people. Unfortunately, the good people don't always make for the most amusing stories. So, yeah, you know, there's going to be a lot of horror stories from customers. Eric Slattery. Love scumbag seller segments, especially the Cincinnati scalper. I like how it's capitalized. This is like
the interview,
like
the Cincinnati
the
scalper
Camp Brown killer. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cincinnati scalper.
The Cincinnati scalper who bought the interview tickets and couldn't. Sell
them. Did we take him to the woodshed on that segment?
That was fun.
Oh, did we beat that little rat faced bastard up for trying to freaking... Basically, what he tried to do was buy all the interview tickets. Remember when it was in limited release, like Christmas fucking weekend and on Christmas? He tried to make money off it. And
on Christmas fucking day.
They didn't sell, and then he tried to get his money back and was complaining that the movie theaters didn't give back a scalper back at the movie tickets, which they didn't have to. What an asshole.
Yep.
At That Ass Is My Boss, which could be still one of my favorite names of any person who's ever tweeted a question at us.
Uh-huh.
His CU podcast... memory is, any conversation you guys have about Zack Snyder is always classic. In fact, I wish you could make it a weekly segment.
I'm glad we can't make it another
the Zack Snyder segment of the week!
The funny thing is that I realize that even when I'm feeling completely calm, and I say at the beginning of a Zack Snyder segment that I'm not going to get upset about something or yell, that I always betray myself, and I do, every single time, because he's a fucking piece of shit. The end.
We'll never get in a WB movie now, Ian.
Yeah, oh no.
He's a built guy. You shouldn't mess with Zach. This is at Glickpur, Geekpur. The moment Ian shat in protest of the Turtles movie, and just some good yelling. Yeah. I actually watched that one like last week. I think that's one of the more popular ones we ever did.
I just say stuff, and it comes out of my mouth, and sometimes it doesn't really make any sense.
You
didn't
see
that.
Did you see the Turtles movie?
No.
You're going to see the sequel with Seamus as Bebop in
no,
it?
Double no.
The double no?
No, I will double shit myself in protest of that. I will pee in my own mouth.
At Super Duper Subby, when Pat finally gave us the scoop on his NWC gold car acquisition story, classic episode. See, when I guess I don't appreciate that people want to hear about, like, to them it's like finding something really important.
Sure.
For me, it was just, I'm just getting rid of a lot of money that I could be using towards, like, my mortgage or going on vacations. But, yeah, that was a cool story. I met the guy in Chicago, Mike, very nice guy. Yeah, that'll help you appreciate me wasting money. That's Stewie, simply Pat's hair. I don't know where else you can go with that. I got to get it cut.
Funny because I'm the shaggy dog. I mean, but your hair just kind of grows.
My hair just grows out, not down.
You look a lot like Ludwig Koopa when your hair gets out of control. If we could just dye your hair blue, you would look just like him.
Go Sean Baby mode. At Reckless Youth 26, when Ian had to play and review DuckTales Remastered. Yeah, because he was forced to because someone mailed it in a year and a half after he said he was going to play and review
because
it.
Because I knew
that
I...
That still bothers me, by the way, that you basically just bagged on the whole thing.
Because I didn't want to play it. I knew
but
it
you
wasn't...
said you were going to review it.
Yes, and I didn't feel like dumping $15 on something I knew I wasn't going to like.
Oh, my God.
The thing is I finally did. Thank you to Alan, I believe, Thompson. I did play it, and I did review it. And the thing was, is my review, I think, even, I rarely go back, but I went back to that segment and I listened. My review came across, I think, as pretty even. I complimented the game in a number of areas and very, very calmly explained why I didn't like it. And I still, to this day, just get shit comments.
Dude, really?
Yeah, on how horrible.
On where?
Both the YouTube video and occasionally
on Twitter. Why would you check the YouTube comments from that?
I don't know, because I felt like maybe I was reasonable enough to have people be like, oh, okay, I get it.
It's
but,
YouTube.
Yeah, it's YouTube.
You're going to learn that you should not respond on YouTube. That's one thing you haven't learned in 50 episodes of the CU podcast.
Because sometimes I just like going toe-to-toe with those fucking scumbags.
Oh, God. That's not going to be helpful.
Peyton Ellis, 767. Pat and Ian laughing about the Atari games based on Denny's.
I think we were laughing more about the negative reaction, the over-the-top reaction had the people that Denny's was destroying the Atari legacy of Space Invaders and, you know, and Missile Command. It was just like, there's stupid little mini, you know, games on your freaking phone with ketchup bottles instead of a Space Invader. Like, how could you get bad of shape at that? You're not, like, what are you talking about? The argument is what's silly. The games are silly, too, but the argument is what made it even sillier.
Exactly.
To us. It's just like, why are you getting bad of shape on this? It's so dumb.
It's so meaningless in the long run.
It's actually cute to me. At Mega 5K, I'm really biased, but one of my favorite CU podcast memories is Yacht Gum. I'm not ashamed to admit it. So I'm not positive. I think we were talking about
Yacht Club games in a discussion about Shovel Knight when Shovel Knight was coming out. No, I think what happened was is you said Yacht Club and I thought you said Yacht Gum or the other way around. Either way, it was like the last thing we were doing at the night. I remember we were tired and I remember we laughed about it considerably. I actually don't remember the exact circumstances.
If it was Yacht Club games, I could have mixed together clubbing games. Made it,
yeah.
I could have just said Yacht Gum, which is still funny.
That might have been it.
And we just talked about this one at iBrainiac. For some reason, I'm picturing the drunk Southern man that was just looking to make a deal. Little bitch! Does that ever come back in?
No, but it's a funny one to close on because when it's not like it happens every time, but a lot of times when people walk into the store, people who perhaps have more boisterous personalities or are a bit more forward, and I don't I don't dislike it. I think it's funny. But they will come in, and instead of being like, hi, fan of the podcast, they'll be like, little bitch! And I'm like, nice to meet you, listener of the podcast.
That could be a CU podcast t-shirt.
Little bitch.
But you know what should be a CU podcast t-shirt?
Danny Sullivan. Mm-hmm.
So, it's in the works. It's not ready because I'm extremely busy. But we will be putting out a new t-shirt available. It'll be on Teespring. And it'll be a Danny Sullivan CU podcast exclusive shirt. So, be on the lookout for that. I don't know, a couple weeks. I got to do a new Pat Danny's Punk episode. Ian's got to finish writing for the book and blow bubbles.
It's really good gum.
Bubbles will appreciate it. So, if you like us, we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/pixelsickle, and you can watch this every week. You can watch it, you know, as it's recorded and uploaded. And then we want to just thank you guys for being on board for almost 2 years, 50 episodes.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Not including the one-offs like me interviewing Brendel Floss and the podcast guiding, as Ian calls it, at Too Many Games.
Oh, it's crazy because, like, I think back, right, and it doesn't seem like it's been that long, but...
Oh, it feels like that long to me.
2 years ago, I hadn't even proposed to Vani, let alone was I married. I looked completely different. My hair was short and I had no beard.
You're very much scarier now.
Yeah, I don't know.
I saw the hair. I started growing my hair longer in late 2012, so my hair wasn't as long as this, but it was longer. And I probably was a little cute, chubbier Pat then, but... It was fun doing the first couple in the room.
No, it was awkward.
And then graduating to here.
That was better.
You were awkward. You're still awkward.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
That's fine.
Here's to 50 more.
Yeah. I mean, sure. Why not? 50 sure. Just seems like a big number. But we did 50.
Imagine if we were doing it every week then. It'd be double. This would be the 100th episode by now.
I'd have a lot more grays than you would too.
Well, no, in the same amount of time. I said if we did it every week, by now it would be 100 episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, you're saying from the stress?
From stress.
I know it's stressful you can come here and shooting the shit for 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's very stressful.
Pat, I can make jokes.
So, with that, we'll see you in a couple weeks. I'll be at Con Bravo in Canada.
I'm in jealous of you.
Well, you could go last minute Buffalo trip.
No, I can't.
Any words of advice before we head on out?
Words
of wisdom?
Floss.